This show is like that big space sun probe, Roger.
Yeah, burning up on entry.
Sometimes it just doesn't take off on time. Thanks for staying up late with us, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. We'll be here till 5 a.m. That's your Roger Badish in the newsroom. Just rains behind the glass. And we threw about 18 things at Aubrey before the show started tonight. So I guess we all kind of forgot to switch control of the studios.
Yeah, I think so.
Whoopsie.
That's okay.
Whoopsie.
It happens.
It does.
Yeah.
Luckily, at 1 in the morning.
That's not all. My little behind the scenes, we have a what we call a teleprompter screen in the newsroom.
You do?
Yeah. So that we can, you know, because I'm blind, so I need big letters on contrasting background and stuff. And for, I don't know, about 8 years now that we've been using this program, my screen has always looked the same. Mm-hmm. I just sign in just about 10 before the hour, and it went back to its original settings. And nobody uses my screen except me.
Sometimes technology likes to do things like that, too.
I know.
Hey, let me ask you. You're not sitting in the dark right now, are you?
I've got the lights turned down low.
Oh, okay, you do. I thought that we had
a... That's why all you see is my shiny head.
Yeah, that's okay. I like that.
Okay.
You're getting along with the spirit, because I turned the lights down in here.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we have four monitors going at all times.
You're lit.
It lights things up pretty well, quite honestly. You don't need the rest of the lights.
Yeah.
And I just like the overnight feel.
It does feel kind of...
Patty got me used to that in the old studio.
With the lamps?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to get a little lamp in here.
You know what you need? You need like a lava lamp right next to you so that people can see it in the...
That would be bad.
Yeah.
You know what? Just remind me. Let's buy a lava lamp because we have a locker. Do you even know the combination to our locker?
No. I didn't even know that we had a locker.
We have one. It says, you know, everybody has their little name. Do you have one, Jess?
I don't know. I don't know that you had one.
Yeah, it says Booba. I think it's like the very...
You're down at the bottom, I think.
Down at the bottom of the corner.
Oh,
okay.
And I think I'm across, and I'm about midway up.
I have no idea how... I imagine Marlene tells us what the...
Yeah, you got a combination,
right?
Yeah.
So we got to ask Marlene, and then we've got a little place we can store stuff.
And I can show you. I don't know if I have shown you mine, but I went out, and because it's wide enough and deep enough that you can get these small plastic shelves that sit on top of each other, because it's just one big open space.
So we need to get just...
I have shelves in mine now, and I have different things in there.
My kids went and got their lockers ready this week.
Right.
Those kids all put little shelves in there. Mm-hmm. We could put a shelf in it. We could put a mirror in it.
Mm-hmm.
We could, like, cut little things out of magazines. We'll tape it to the inside of the door.
Wow.
Pictures of your idols?
Yes.
Like your teen idols?
Put a little mirror. We could check ourselves before we come to the show.
Matt has got this ready to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I think
he has all these ideas.
I'm going to buy a couple of Tiger Beats this week.
Awesome.
We'll go through. We'll see what we like. Maybe a Justin Bieber, maybe a Taylor.
Definitely Taylor.
Yes, totally Taylor.
I heard that Davy Jones from the Monkees is pretty cool.
Oh,
I forgot what my settings were. It's been so long. Oh, my God.
Can we go on an adventure to find our lockers?
Oh, I'll show you.
We know where the locker
is.
Yeah.
You know where the locker room is, right, Jess? You know where there are lockers, right?
Mm.
Have you not even seen the lockers? They're right next to the fridge that's, we have two fridges here now. It's crazy.
Yeah, if you know where the production studios are, right? Just doesn't know where anything is.
Anything is here. Like, there are a lot of studios and little nooks and crannies around here.
And that's where your mail is now, too, by the lockers.
I just looked through. There's no mail for us. We're good.
No mail.
Nope, not for us.
People love you so much.
No. That's, hey, I'm at the age where if there's nothing in the mail, that's a good sign.
Yep.
It's not like Ed McMahon's coming to give me anything.
I got mail.
You think Jess just got that? Roger, do you think there's no chance?
What? No, I had mail.
No.
Oh, what?
I just said.
Yeah.
There's no chance Ed McMahon has anything for me in there.
Yes, he does.
No. But
now, they're still out there.
Roger, hold on.
I bet you there's one. What? What?
Somebody just texted Aubrey that said they can't hear me. They only hear Roger on the air.
What? I can hear you. Uh-oh.
We don't have the...
So I'm having a one-sided conversation.
People are texting, the show sounds better than ever. Could you go check that real quick before we do the Wi-Fi here? Just in case, because if that's really happening, that's probably not good. I would think that everything appears to be working right, but hell, you never know.
If I can hear you, everyone out there should be able to hear you.
Well, maybe we're on some...
internal circuit? I don't think so.
Texter says I can hear Roger, but not the main studio host. Somebody else, if you'd like to text in and let us know what's going on here. If you're hearing the actual show, if you're not.
For those not hearing
see,
that.
See, now somebody else said they are hearing me.
They are.
It's selective hearing. Was that my wife texting? Boy, I'm ready. I'm ready. Shecky Green, watch out. Here I come.
Maybe they're only listening in mono. You're in one channel and I'm in the other.
I need to get that AM stereo radio. That's all the rage these days. We're good, Aubrey? Aubrey says we're good.
All right.
Aubrey says we're good.
If Aubrey says we're good.
Then we're good.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, just as somebody said, I need to turn up my mic. I'm loud. I'm not. No, my levels are good. We're all good, people. All right, let's all relax.
All right.
Settle it down a bit.
Yeah.
All right, so we missed the commercials during the news.
Yes.
Are we set with that now, Jess?
Are we supposed to play them?
Okay, we're going to go back.
Okay.
And we're going to reset.
Mm-hmm.
We'll get things started here in a moment. 312-981-7200 is the number. You're more than welcome to call. More than welcome to text. We got a lot of fun stuff to talk about tonight. We'll start running through it next here on 720 WGN. There's a beautiful moon out tonight, actually. I think I saw on the way in. Everybody here is out of sight. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala here with you till 5 a.m. Feel free to call or text. Thank you for so many people who already texted in to let us know we are coming through just fine and dandy. And the Ishnala commercial already played. Still got to work that out, Raj.
I know. I'm not the one with the connections.
That's on my inbox.
All right.
I don't know that I have connections either, but...
And I heard somebody else on the station, I can't remember who, but one day I was driving around and listening. I can't remember for the life of me. But they started talking about doing a remote from there during their shift, and obviously they would be open then.
Most likely.
Yeah.
Although, it depends, I bet. I bet they're open like 4 to 11. Don't you think it would have to be like Roe or, Patty and Andrea or something like that?
Maybe it was Roe during Roe's show.
That would make sense. I can see them out there.
Yeah.
I could totally see them out there.
But we got to beat them to it.
We'll try.
Somehow.
We'll try.
Run up there, tape a shot. I keep telling you, we should tape it and bring it back down.
Nah.
I know. It's not the same feel.
Not the same.
I know.
Can't do that.
Yeah.
Can't be done. 312-981-7200 at 1:30, as we mentioned. 847 says, sounds like Matt is in a closet. Okay.
Whatever that means.
I don't know.
You muffled?
I don't know what they're trying to say.
You're distant?
I don't know.
Maybe it's because you got the lights off.
Maybe. Oh, Aubrey just changed the setting. Was that really? Was that something?
What did it do?
I don't know. Took me out of the closet, I guess.
Ooh, we got a little reverb.
Do we?
I thought I heard a little reverb.
I don't know. That's just me in the middle of the night, Raj.
Okay. Wait, there is reverb.
There is?
I just heard it on me.
That's your tinnitus. Acting up again.
Again.
All right. Coming up at 1:30, Eddie Comenda is going to jump on the phone with us. We mentioned during the crosstalk that the Algonquin Township road supervisor, somebody, put on their Algonquin Township Highway Commissioner, Andrew Gasser, puts on their marquee, the North Worst Herald is fake news.
Well, that's not very nice of them.
Not only has he taken on the fake news mantra,
mm-hmm.
but he also borrowed President Trump's knack for making nicknames for people. So they're the North Worst Herald, not the Northwest.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah.
Well, that's what he did. But he called them the North Worst Herald. And I texted Eddie. I'm like, oh, we got to talk about this. And I said, well, is there one, what did you guys do to him? Clearly there was something you reported on that he's all upset about. He's like, mm-hmm. it's not one thing. It's a bunch of stuff. And he gets mad. So we'll talk about that, why he did that, and, how the Northwest Herald is responding and how the township is responding to their highway commissioner doing that. And why does Algonquin have a highway commissioner?
Well, I think, but that state runs it. But I think there's a highway that goes past Algonquin.
Well, yeah, I live 2 minutes from Algonquin. I was in Algonquin tonight having dinner. It's 2 minutes from my house. I-90 runs right by, but not through Algonquin. Now,
unless
county roads and state highways or whatever, we have
smaller ones. Arlington Heights Road, does that run?
It's not in Algonquin.
Okay,
we have Randall Road.
And that's a highway.
We have Route 31.
Yeah.
You know, blah, blah, blah.
Maybe that's what it is.
We need a commissioner in each town for this. Maybe this is a sign of maybe there's some areas we can trim local government just a little bit.
Oh, you think?
Well, a highway commissioner in Algonquin?
Mm-hmm. Someone's in charge of handling the state and federal highway funds for those roads that require them, because then you don't use your local tax money for those roads. You use the highway funds for those, and you need someone to administer those in the local municipality.
You would think that we have that falls on somebody's desk. That's just what I'm saying, is that I could see in Chicago there's, you know, 8,000 miles of roads. In Algonquin, it's, you know, it's a large suburb. It's a really nice suburb.
Mm-hmm.
But that there's a separate guy just for the federal funding for the roads? That doesn't fall onto the township board or whatever?
I don't know.
You oversee that? Maybe he's on the board. Maybe this is an additional title. I don't know.
You mean on the local board?
I mean, I would think, you know,
well, yeah,
the Algonquin town, it's a township, so they probably have a board, right?
Right.
Four or five people. I would think one of them is like, hey, by the way, this year you're in charge of the federal funds for the highways. Okay.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'll form a committee. Yeah. Not, we need a commissioner for that, who's spending time writing signs on the board that say,
stay off my highway.
The North Worst Herald is fake news. He also had it spelled wrong.
Oh, really?
It said N-O-R-H-T-W-O-R-S-T.
Nort?
Nort Worst Herald. So the Northwest Herald called him and said, hey, you misspelled North Worst. He said, someone changed it then. Then he went and changed it back to North Worst.
North Worst.
So the Northwest Herald, fake news that they are, went ahead and alerted him to the fact that he had misspelled his tricky little twist on their name. Without thanking them,
yeah,
he went out and changed it back. But he did alert them. He did alert them. Listen to this.
Government gone crazy.
Oh, where was it in here? He told them. Oh, God, I can't remember where I saw it now, but I think he told them this will be good video for you. And they got it. So he alerted them that he's going to go change the sign, I think. And then they got video of him changing the sign. So people are funny. People,
yeah, are funny.
We're going to talk about Omarosa a little bit, not because I'm a fan of Omarosa. I remember that's actually, I think, the one Apprentice I watched.
Really?
With Omarosa.
I couldn't. After the first day,
wasn't that?
I stopped.
Wasn't she on the very first one? Or am I wrong?
No. She was not on the first one. She came a couple of years later. Yeah.
But she was a villain. I mean, she was.
Oh, yeah. From the start.
She brought you into that show, in a way. She played the role of villain. And it's very fascinating what she's doing here. It seems to be, you would think, highly illegal.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, you know, the Trump campaign is threatening to sue her over her NDA, but I read a story that one of the other people, because they all have, he makes them all sign NDAs, non-disclosure agreements, when
right,
they join the White House or wherever, and somebody else, I think they were trying to stop from doing stuff, and the judge ruled because of the way the NDA is written, it was invalid, I believe. So I don't know if that's what will happen with Omarosa, but apparently she didn't care, and she videotaped, audiotaped, transcribed, whatever, pretty much everything she did there. Somebody tweeted tonight, she was like Inspector Gadget in there. Video recorder.
Oh, right.
Video recorder on her belt buckle, audio recorder on her pen, you know, something in her glasses, whatever. She was walking around, and she just keeps rolling out tapes, and now people are saying there's like hundreds of these things. Mm. And she's just going to slow burn these.
You know what? You are right, and I am wrong.
Of course. About what now?
She was on the first season.
See? Ha, 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 ha. She made that show. He owes her. I'll tell you what. She kind of helped make that show and put it on the map. He's all, she's this, she's that, she begged. If you look back, I want to get like one of our TV critics on the phone, because I'm telling you, that first season, Omarosa was a draw because she was the person you love to hate on that show.
Yeah.
All right, 312-981-7200. We got to get to news in a second, but we had a couple of calls. So let's get to them. K Kent is in Algonquin. Hey, good morning, Kent. You're on 720 WGN. Kent, how are you, sir?
Hey, great. What's going on, buddy?
Not too much. What's going on with you?
Not much, man. You guys were discussing Algonquin, a bunch of questions. I live out here. What was the question about it?
There's no question about it just yet. Just hold on and listen in, Kent. We'll get back to you. We've got a reporter coming up that'll tell the whole story. So keep listening in. I appreciate it. Let's get to Lulu in Fox River Gove. Lulu, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Just fine. I'll make a quick comment about Algonquin Township. I'm going to take a shot in the dark, but the newspaper is probably criticizing the township for the way they spend money. I don't know if you know this or not, but Illinois is the only state that has townships. So it's just another taxing body. I live in Algonquin Township. I'm now in Fox River Grove, but I used to be in Crystal Lake, and that was Algonquin Township, too. I don't think any of Algonquin City is in Algonquin Township. I think that's a different township. So there's probably something about the way they spend the money or nepotism or something controversial like that, because it's always been contentious. And but I'll tell you, they have the best of the best.
All right, hold on. You've got to explain something to me, Lulu. A, I grew up in the town of Munster, Indiana. Munster was a town. Wasn't it a township? How can Illinois be the only state with towns or townships? Is a township something very specific?
Yes. It's a very specific taxing body.
Okay.
And I could be wrong, but I thought that Illinois is the only one that has townships, and they've always been controversial. Hmm. Because of the money they take in. Now, I actually live on Algonquin Road, but it's owned Algonquin, and they plow my street, but so does Fox River Grove. They both do it. But I'll tell you, I mean, like I said, their equipment is a number one.
All right. I appreciate the call very much. There's a lot of stuff we have to figure out here. A, I don't think there's a city of Algonquin and an Algonquin township. If there is, that's news to me. We'll learn as we go. We're going to take a quick break for the news. Then we'll get at it with Eddie Commenda from the Northwest Herald. No, it's the Northwest Herald. It's a fine paper. Trust me. Subscribe if you live locally. 312-981-7200. First, let's check the news headlines. Roger Badish. It's Matt Bobala with you here. 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number. Eddie Commenda is an old buddy of mine from our days at DNA Info here in Chicago. Now Ed is writing for the Northwest Herald. He jumps on the phone right now. Hey, Eddie, how are you?
Hey, Matt, how you doing? I'm doing great.
Good, man. Thanks for staying up late with us.
So, oh, yeah, absolutely.
I texted you late Friday night because I was scrolling through Facebook or Twitter and had seen that you had posted something that you guys had out tonight. The headline was Algonquin Township Highway Commissioner Andrew Gasser shares fake news message on government marquee. That would be news in and of itself. For you, it was a little more personal because he wrote, "The Northwest Herald is fake news."
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my Friday was rocking and rolling, business as usual, and Friday afternoon rolls around, and I start getting phone calls and text messages from sources out in Algonquin Township saying, you know, this message had appeared on this marquee on the side of the road of Route 14, which is a the thoroughfare in McHenry County in about 3 minutes from my office. So I jumped in my car and I drove over there, and there it was, you know, double sided marquee, those manual letters you pop into the board. And first thing I noticed was that Northwest was misspelled, which I thought was kind of interesting. So, you know, I stuck around and I saw the highway commissioner, and you know, I called out his name, and you know, he said, "I got nothing for you, sir," and walked in his office. So, you know, as reporters do, you know, I stalked him down a little bit, tried to get a little bit more context of what happened. And, you know, that's what led to this story, which, you know, the only response I got was that he didn't want to talk to us because he believes we're fake news. I'm a fake reporter. It was a very interesting Friday, and something that I don't think I've ever dealt with in all the time I've been doing journalism. Yeah. So it was that was the start.
So now an interesting part to me, I mentioned this earlier, but I thought I read on the website, I can't find it in the story now, though, that you or somebody let him know, somebody from the Daily from the Northwest Herald is who let him know that it was spelled wrong, right?
That was me, yes. I noticed it was spelled wrong, and in the brief chat that we had in the parking lot of Algonquin Township, I let him know that it was spelled wrong, and his response was that somebody must have changed the sign. So he walks away, and I stayed out there. I took a couple more pictures, and this gentleman, Andrew Gosser, appeared again a short time later, and he changed the sign, which is where we got that photo that's attached to the story of him changing the sign and walking away from it. So it was me that notified him, and he was pretty quick to change that.
Is as of late Friday night, do you know, is the sign still up there? Because you guys had a bunch of comments in the story then from other government officials in the township who were mostly kind of like, it's a waste of time, it's a waste of things, that's not proper use. Is the sign still up as far as you know?
As far as I know, the sign is still up, and I'm going to follow up with this today, Saturday, to see if it's still there. But as of Friday night, it appeared to still be up.
Did he let you know, because I asked you earlier tonight what the specific beef was, and you said it doesn't seem to be anything specific. I'm searching his name on the Northwest Herald website, and there's a bunch of stories with him about, you know, recycling, about earlier this month, the Algonquin Township Highway Department and Algonquin Township seemed to have a spat about some things, and the Highway Department said, hey, we're not going to take care of these certain things anymore because we couldn't come to an intergovernmental agreement about who handles what. I don't see what exactly happened here that broke the camel's back for him. Do we know what that is?
Well, I don't know specifically how it started. I couldn't tell you what the genesis of the fake news attack was. What I can tell you is that the first thing I noticed within the last few weeks, a couple months even, was that when it comes to this highway department and this highway commissioner, the first shot that we took didn't have anything to do with a story that was published. It actually had to do with the process of journalism. And the first time I noticed the highway commissioner using the term fake news in an attack against the Northwest Herald was actually in response to a Freedom of Information Act request that I filed to the highway department asking for a copy of the highway commissioner's Outlook calendar. Because, you know, reporters file a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests, especially to government officials who don't talk to the press anymore. For me, that's the last. I use a lot of Freedom of Information Act requests to get information, but especially when a government official doesn't want to talk to me, I definitely rely on that. I mean, the documents are huge, and, you know, I was trying to figure out how the highway commissioner was spending his time trying to get an idea of what kind of work the highway commissioner did. I mean, it's an elected position. And, you know, I did some calls and I found out that maybe a good way to see that is by seeing his calendar. So I requested it, and then all of a sudden there was labels of fake news attached to the Northwest Herald, not because of a story, but because I asked a question and I requested a document, which is something that I've been noticing a lot of all over the, you know, the country on a national level and a super local level. It's not often the story we write, it's the question we ask.
Well, it sounds like, I mean, and I can understand him being, you know, he's probably never had a reporter request his Outlook calendar before, and you know he's mm-hmm. been in the news for a couple of things that are a little more heated. This breakup with Algonquin Township. There's a story, a headline: Algonquin Township Highway Commissioner's recycling stance from enthusiasm to abandonment. So he probably feels that his side of the story isn't getting out, maybe, or whatever. But then a Freedom of Information request on his Outlook calendar probably raised the hairs on the back of his neck, like thinking you're out to get him. I could see that in some way, that somebody would think, like, why are they requesting that? What is the deal here? And I don't, you know, listen, I understand the journalism side of it. Like, hey, we're going to request that because we want to figure out what's going on. And if you're not talking to us, here's the other ways we investigate and do research and try to find things out. But I could see where if, especially if it's somebody that's, you know, certain politicians are very friendly with the press, certain politicians, you know, either got burned or just, I think are very reticent, or this kind of national fervor that's brewing about the press that's now trickling down to other people. I think that takes a hold. Or in some cases, and I have no idea if it's in this case, you don't want people to know everything and things are working pretty well, and so you need to spin it to something else. I have no idea if that's what's going on with Mr. Gass or not, but I could see where requesting his ALEC calendar got him a little heated. I would bet that that's a big part of it, I would think. So when you've talked to him in the past, was there a moment he was talking to you and then stopped? Or because Ed, and I don't know how long you've been with the Northwest Herald. I know that, you know, a year or so ago, we were talking all the time when we were both at DNA Info. How long have you been covering the Algonquin Township? Is this kind of a new beat and suddenly there's a guy asking questions and this guy's like, why is somebody suddenly asking questions? I've been doing this job for years and it was, you know, I never had the press up my tush.
Oh, wow. Where do I begin with that? I guess I'll start. I started at the Northwest Herald in September of 2017, the end of September. And I came to the Northwest Herald a lot of months, probably about 6 or 7 months after Andrew Gosser, the highway commissioner, won an upset election against the former highway commissioner, a guy by the name of Bob Miller, who was, if there was a Chicago equivalent of a politician in McHenry County, it would be Bob Miller. This guy had been running the township for 26 years. No, I'm sorry, the highway department, which is a separate entity from the township, which is right across the hall. He'd been running the highway department for about 26 years. Before that, it was his father. Before that, it was his father's father. I mean, he sounds familiar.
So it's like Rosemont in Algonquin.
Yeah. So he'd been running this thing for a long time. And the way that Bob Miller ran his office was like a family business. He had his wife as a secretary with benefits and all this. She made over $100,000 a year or near that. He had his two sons-in-laws in there making a lot of money. And Andrew Gosser, somewhere along the line, after a long career in the Air Force, a short career in the Navy, he got involved in politics in McHenry County and decided to run and try to take out Bob Miller. Well, he was successful. He knocked on a lot of doors. He converted a lot of people. He got the vote. He took over the office that nobody thought that this guy, Bob Miller, would ever lose. People thought that the Millers were going to run that department forever. So I came to this months after Andy had won. And months after he took office, and within the first half hour of him being in office, he fires those two sons-in-laws and another employee, which sparks this really complicated legal battle, hundreds of thousands of dollars of legal fees, you know, just a lot of controversy there. And the first story that I wrote about Andrew Gosser and the highway department was about a labor judge ruling that the highway department had to rehire these employees because they were fired without cause. Well, that didn't stand for very long, and the labor case is still brewing. But there have been times where we've talked a lot. I've been in Andrew Gosser's office. I've stood in the parking lot with him looking at the new snowplow he purchased that happened to be painted pink. Andrew Gosser is known in McHenry County as the politician that wears pink. Everything he wears, his hats, his shirts, his sweatshirts, and he decided to buy a snowplow, and he decided to paint it pink, and what he says is it's for breast cancer. So, you know, like you do, you go out there, you do a story about the highway commissioner has the only pink snowplow in town. Well, he loved that story. You know, the story showed up on, you know, Facebook pages, his public figure page, saying it's a great story. You know, we've talked about, you know, his family. We've talked about his the genesis of him getting in office. A lot of this stuff, as you know, as a reporter, doesn't make it into a story, but I felt like we had a rapport going. And then all of a sudden, you know, the deeper that I got into to looking into the highway department and looking into, you know, some of the things that Andrew was angling to do, one of which was privatizing parts of the road district, this distance started to grow between the paper and the highway department. And, you know, not all the stories read like the snowplow story.
Yeah.
I mean, that sort of happens if you're a reporter and you're digging into things.
Sort of, you know, happens if you're a politician, too. Not everything's going to be wine and roses. I mean, you're going to face questions about what you're doing, especially if you're trying to change things, especially if it's something a wee bit controversial, like privatizing certain things. Let me ask you, we only have a few minutes left, Eddie, and I want to figure out, because I live out in West Dundee, I live like 2 minutes away from all this. Algonquin Township Highway Department, is it common that there's highway departments? Is that really a part of Algonquin, or is it more like a county thing? Explain to me how that works.
Well, this is a conversation that is only going to ramp up even more in Illinois, where there are thousands of units of government all over the state. And in a place like McHenry County, there are 17 townships. There's also villages, and there's also cities. So when you're talking about Algonquin in McHenry County, you have to be careful with your shorthand, because Algonquin could mean the village of Algonquin, or it can mean the township, or it can mean the road district. You know, there's also the village of Cary, and there's also Fox River Grove, but then there's also Cary Grove High School.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are multiple units of government within 5-minute drives of one another. So McHenry County is really loaded with these units of government. And when it comes down to it, Algonquin Township is a separate government entity than the Algonquin Township Road District or the Highway Department. So it could get really complicated when you really start separating out what constitutes a specific government.
Who does the Algonquin Township Highway Department serve? Does it just serve the town of Algonquin?
It serves multiple neighborhoods, multiple parts of Crystal Lake, parts of Algonquin, parts of the village of Lake in the Hills, parts of Cary, the village. It's responsible for over 30 miles of road.
Okay.
And Algonquin Township is actually the most populous township in McHenry County. It serves over 80,000 people. If you look at a map, it includes parts of multiple municipalities, villages, townships even.
Is it common that there would be a highway department for a township like that? Like, do we have that? And, you know, wherever they stop their services, there's another highway department from that serves several towns that come together? Because reading the story, I'm thinking, does Algonquin really need a highway department? Is that a common thing?
Yeah, it's a very common thing, especially in McHenry County. Like I said, in McHenry County, there's 17 townships, and each one of those has a highway department. You know, Nunda Township. There's Nunda Township. There's also the Nunda Township Highway Department. McHenry Township in Johnsburg, Illinois, has McHenry Township Highway Department. Grafton has its own highway department. You know, it's a very common thing around here. A lot of people, especially in a place like Chicago, we're used to just Chicago and Chicago City Hall. We got the Cook County Commissioners.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you were, it would be impossible for one reporter to cover everything that's happening in every township in McHenry County, just because there isn't enough hours in a day to have the conversation or go to the meetings, because there's just so many officials you have to deal with, and so many meetings and so many departments.
It's funny because I only have a minute left, but when somebody attacks the press like this, of course, we talk a lot about attacks on the press in the last year and a half. But, you know, if he feels something has been misreported, he could call you, he could write to you, he could say, hey, he could take to his Facebook page and say, hey, Northwest Herald did this story, but here's what they got wrong, or here's what they did. I think government officials have more ability than ever to get their side of the story out, to say, hey, I believe this was written wrong or incorrectly, or to ask for a correction, whatever it is, you can certainly get it out there. But it sounds like from what you've dealt with or read about going around the country, it doesn't seem to be as much about actual facts of a story. And even with President Trump, I would say his attacks on the news are never about they have this wrong. It's about I don't like that they're reporting on these things instead of these things, or I disagree with their opinion on the story. You know, this doesn't seem to be a thing about facts. It seems to be he's getting mad that maybe you're reporting on the things. He wants more. My opinion on this, not yours, is that he wants more pink snowplow stories, unless, hey, let's take a look at your calendar and see what you've been up to.
I think you're onto something, Matt. You know, this is something I've been thinking about a lot lately. And Friday afternoon and the whole fake news story really put this in perspective for me. I do believe that there is a trickle down from the top. There is a tone that trickles down from the top, no matter which way you chop it. You know, if you have a president who is attacking the free press as enemy of the people, and you have government officials on lower rungs of that ladder, in places as small as Algonquin Township, you know, this is something that we're seeing on a local level. And, you know, if Andrew Gosar called me tomorrow, I would have a conversation with him like I would have a conversation with anybody else. I mean, I don't take this personally.
Yeah.
And this is, you're absolutely right. They could write op-eds. Government officials can call in and point out errors. We have a correction policy. If we get something wrong, we'll fix it. If something needs clarified, we'll clarify it. I mean, that doesn't change. And just because somebody puts something on a sign doesn't mean that they're dead to me. I will talk to them. And I think that most reporters would have that same opinion.
Eddie Commendo is a writer for the Northwest Herald. You can check out the story and all their stories at nwherald.com, nwherald.com, and it says right on there, 88 cents for 8 weeks. So it's a good day, as John Williams likes to say, to subscribe to your local newspaper. Eddie Commendo, thanks so much for jumping on the phone with us, buddy.
Hey, it's been a pleasure, Matt. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll talk again soon. Thank you so much. Ed Commenda, Northwest Herald, nwherald.com. News is next. Speaking of our friend John Williams, I think this morning, is he has two shows with Thomas Jefferson are today, I believe it's today, August 18th, it is.
Yeah.
Is there, there were still tickets for one of them. Maybe the 10 a.m. show, maybe the 1 p.m. show, I'm not sure. Go to WGNradio.com to find out more. But if you've never seen a Thomas Jefferson show and you've got some time today, it is so, so well worth your time. Unfortunately, I have a family event today, so I can't be there, but I would be there in a minute to see John and TJ again because I love them. And speaking of our friend John, later in the show, we're going to play a little audio from his show from earlier this week because they told a fascinating story that was in the news about a family who passed away. They liquidate everything in the house. Suddenly, oh, that painting's worth $186 million. Oh, they stole it. We'll talk about that. But when we come back after the news here, I want to continue talking a little bit about the credibility of the press and how you feel about it. Is this really trickled down to a local level? I know President Trump goes on his tears about it. And if you're a big supporter of President Trump, you probably feel somewhat the same way. But how do you feel about the press and how well you trust it right now? I am curious about that. If anybody wants to jump in, 312-981-7200. Give us a call. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Now here's the news with Roger Badish. Just sing along to my stereo. 312-981-7200 is the number. Matt Bubala here with you until 5 a.m. on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Our friend Lulu from Algonquin called in earlier tonight, and she's back because she ran out to check and see if that sign is still up. Lulu, how are you?
Lulu, the junior reporter. The Northwest Herald is fake news.
You're reading that live on the sign?
Absolutely. I'm sitting here in the parking lot. It says Algonquin Township Highway Department, and then it says the Northwest Herald is fake news. I can't take a picture because I can't send a phone, but I mean, I can't send it through my phone.
That's okay.
But what a riot.
It's still up there. And is it lit up at night? They're spending tax dollars electrically lighting up this sign so everybody driving by can see this.
Absolutely. They have another sign that they use for to announce, you know, events, and it's kind of like a digital sign, so, it, you know, you can't read it unless you stop. This one, you can't miss it.
Yeah, I saw the picture on the story at NWHerald.com, and it's a big sign. It's not some little sign. It's pretty good
size. No, it isn't. It's right. It's practically on the road, and I'm a bulldog about stuff like this. And this was so funny when you talked about it. I'm older now, so I don't get too excited. But when I was kind of in between listening and that, the reporter was talking about exactly what I said about nepotism. Mm-hmm. You know, the secretary making $100,000 a year, and that's been controversy for townships all over Illinois.
I know there was talk earlier this year. I can't remember if it was Ron or somebody else had kind of talked about, do we need all this local government? Because
no.
It does sound like there is a lot of local government, and maybe a lot of it's very necessary. I'm not going to profess that I know anything about it. But when you hear about these things and like the little infighting, if you read the story at NWHerald.com, one of the other stories about Gasser was a few months ago, he's in a battle with Algonquin Township because a township supervisor had banned some guy that works with him from being in the building. Then he lifted the ban, but the guy wasn't getting access to the offices. And so apparently Gasser was fed up with trying to work this stuff out. So he said, okay, here's the deal. I tried to work this out with you. We didn't. So here's the things our highway commission will no longer do. We're not going to set up bingo anymore. We're not going to pay for the buses for the elderly. We're not going to gas the buses.
Yep.
And listed like 10 things that were big. It said, hey, that's it. Now we're done. And then that guy was like, this is political blackmail. And so he's got some stuff he's doing. And I can understand Gasser being upset that Eddie's filing a Freedom of Information Act request for his Outlook calendar. I could see where that seems like personal, like you're trying to dig, like you think I'm doing something wrong. And what's your deal with that? And
doing something wrong.
Well, I don't know that. Maybe he is, maybe he's not, but any politician's got to be aware that if there is local press, they want to know things. You need to be transparent. We should be able to demand transparency from our local government and from our politicians that are elected, who we are all paying. And that's kind of the job of the press, is to ask those questions. Now, you may not like the questions being asked, and you certainly may not like the reporting. But my problem with the whole fake news thing is that it is rarely about some fact that somebody got wrong. It's almost never about that. It's about not liking the way you feel you're being portrayed, or what's being said about you, or what they're deciding to report on. You know, this whole thing with Omarosa that's gotten so interesting. And Lulu, I'm going to let you go. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for checking out that sign. I really do appreciate it. It is still up. When Jess podcasts the show later today, Jess, can you put a picture of the sign up when you do the podcast? Can you throw that out there too?
Oh, of course. I got some great photos for
it. Okay, so we'll have some photos up with it. And let's link to the article, too, for Eddie, so people can go see it. It's at nwherald.com. But it makes me jump into the Omarosa thing a little bit, because there's a big... the White House is very annoyed. And somebody texted, don't even bother talking about Omarosa. Get off that topic. No, what did they write? There was... somebody made me laugh. 6-0 wrote, Omarosa has no credibility. No in caps. So even if I might enjoy what she's saying, I can't. So please don't waste time talking about her. And current events is already too depressing topic. So please just BS with Roger instead. First of all, what Roger and I do is not BS. All right, maybe it is quite a bit. But listen, we got to talk about these things once in a while, everybody. And I know the reality of life is kind of depressing, and so it's fun to just get away from it. But I want to talk about it in some respect on this, that the problem with the fake news is that it's never about the actual reporting of the news. It's not liking how the news is being reported about you, not liking that, you know, they're talking about certain things instead of other. And that gets us to Omarosa, because Sarah Sanders and other spokespeople for the White House are upset that the media is giving Omarosa so much press. I can understand them being upset with that. And they said, listen, back when she was singing nothing but President Trump's praises, you all dismissed her. And that is true. The mainstream media did dismiss Omarosa, I think. I think we all did. Like, oh God, Omarosa. You know, she's some reality show villain who now is, you know, the head of kind of raising black awareness or helping support black support for President Trump. And it was kind of like, you know, does she really have the credentials to be there? And that's a tough question to ask when it's President Trump, because, of course, he doesn't have a political background and he's there. So he's going to bring in the people he wants. And it wasn't necessarily political people. He's just going to bring in the people he thinks. So she has a job. She's in the office and she does get dismissed quite a bit, especially from more mainstream media. I don't even know if Fox News ever really embraced Omarosa. I don't watch, so I don't know, but my guess is she was always somewhat of an outsider in this whole thing. And you always heard little stories that were leaked about Omarosa. So the guess is she was never well-loved or well-received in that White House. Probably, now we're seeing, her own doing. You know, I imagine if you're there taping everything every day and recording everything every day, even if people don't know you're doing that, my guess is you're giving off a vibe of, I'm getting you to say things or something like that. And every story you hear about the White House and the kind of cutthroat atmosphere of that, you would expect that Omarosa did not rub people the right way. I mean, just from what we know of Omarosa, in reality TV is what we know of Omarosa, so maybe that's skewed, but she's okay with being a villain. She's okay with being nasty and doing what it takes to get what she wants. At least that's how I remember it from the show. So combine all that with this, it's not surprising that she was, you know, looked at a certain way from everybody she worked with, and maybe also that she just didn't get a lot of credibility with the media at the time, because don't forget that Kellyanne Conway at least is a political person. I can't remember who else we would really think of, the people that have come and gone from President Trump's communications team, but it's Spicer had a GOP background. Kellyanne Conway has a background. Everybody else probably had more credibility, even if that was shot early on or however you look at it. But Omarosa didn't come in with a ton of political credibility, right? And so she wasn't taken all that seriously. And now she's getting nothing but press, and that's driving the White House crazy, because they're like, hey, she did nothing but sing his praises forever. And you all dismissed it. But now, if she says something bad, you're rushing to write about it. That's a fair point. And that's a fair thing to be annoyed about. Absolutely.
If I may.
The problem is, mm-hmm. She's got tapes to back all this stuff up now, it looks like. And so, there is something to that. And also, you can't complain about everybody, you know, everybody now paying attention because she's writing bad things when... And say, oh, I helped her out, I did this, I did that. Well, you look bad that if you're going to say all these nasty things about her and she was this, she was that, she was crying, you gave her a $180,000 a year job because she was crying? I mean, that makes you look even worse. Don't tell me, oh, she was this, she was that. Say she's disgruntled. Say it didn't work out. Say, you know what, she wasn't a good fit. I thought she had better chops. I really liked her. I this, I that. Why can't he just learn to... positively, you know, you got there's an art to the backhanded compliment. President Trump needs to master. I don't think he cares to, because he'd rather just, you know, try to shoot somebody down as hard as he can when they come after him. But all he has to do is say, you know, it was really disappointing things didn't work out with Omarosa. I saw so much promise in her, but she came in here with an agenda. She did this, she did that. Just discredit her a little more. I'm sure there's plenty out there for it. And then walk away from it. But he attacks so hard and comes after things so hard that it just gives more ammunition. And here, when she's playing the White House as the White House would play other people, I mean, she's just going to drip this stuff out possibly forever, it sounds like. Now the AP is reporting not only is there audio, there's video, there's emails. God knows if she has what else she has. Somebody tweeted,
text messages.
Somebody tweeted earlier tonight. She was like Inspector Gadget. She was a walking production company in there. It sounds like. And the thing that came out that was pretty damning earlier this week was she was talking about how they offered her hush money, basically. And of course, I think everybody fought
after
back on
she
that.
Had been fired.
After she
they
had been fired,
they offered her in the 2020 campaign.
Laura Trump,
yeah.
Who is part of the campaign, the reelection campaign, had a conversation with her and said, "Hey." You know, things didn't work out, but I think there's still a role for you. This, you know, you could stay in D.C., but you might have to go to New York sometimes. But it's going to demand positivity towards the president. You were making 180 or 179 at the White House. I think if we go about 15 a month, Let me think about the math. Yeah, that comes out to 180. I think, you know, we can do that. So whether that was hush money or not, you could debate. But basically, it was saying, hey, we're going to keep you employed. Let's not, you know, walk out of here burning any bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And she's got the tapes to back up that, yeah, that really did happen. I don't know how bad that is or not. I imagine that's pretty common if somebody's got sensitive stuff. And I'll tell you what, I think that there's a lot of people questioning President Trump asking for all these non-disclosure agreements. I don't know if that's ever been done in the White House before. Maybe that has. I don't know. I would imagine it hasn't. But I can totally understand, and I will defend him wanting to do that. Now, we need to have freedom. We need to know about things. I agree with all that. But think about it from Trump's point of view. He's been a celebrity for a long time. Even before Apprentice and all those shows, he was kind of a, you know, real estate celebrity, New York celebrity, whatever. People like that, celebrities, any celebrity who hires a personal assistant or somebody that's going to see the inner workings of their life, they ask to sign a non-disclosure agreement. They don't want them profiting off the job. And I could understand, especially for somebody like President Trump, President Obama, President Bush, President Clinton, they're all politicians, hiring politicians and political lifers to run things and work on things, right? So those are people who are there because that's maybe not they're idealistic or whatever, but because this is what they do with their lives. They work in politics and they want to get to the highest office because they want that job and all those things. But with President Trump and who he's hiring is outsiders and stuff like that, an Omarosa type, Scaramucci, people like this who are wild cards, who will say things that drive attention, things like that, that President Trump likes to surround himself with, those kind of bulldog people. He's got to make sure that he's not hiring those people, whether it's in his organization or in his White House, who are just there to get the experience so then they can go profit from it. I can understand that, where he'd be like, listen, I need you here because of these certain things. I can't have you here for a year just to collect whatever dirt you can and then go sell your tell-all book. And you could see where, within an organization like Donald Trump's, whether it's his organization or him in the White House, where he would want that. I can totally get that because he's got kind of a free-willing, crazy atmosphere. There's a lot of juicy stories that are going to come out of there. And I wouldn't want people there thinking, well, hell, I could always write a book after this. I'm defending President Trump. Take that in. All right. I know you've got something to say, Roger. We've got a break. We've got to catch up on. We've got people calling. 312-981-7200. Let me get Roger's take on this and yours as well in just a moment. 720 WGN. So I like hearing the Blackhawks commercial. It's time to get ready for some hockey again.
Yeah, I saw that. Very nice.
Hope the Hawks can get back on.
By the way, hate to bring up bad news, but I was switching the one of the TV monitors in here.
Okay.
And came across the Little League World Series. Michigan was playing.
Michigan, Roger. Listen, don't think you're going to tell me about Michigan, because I'm going to tell you about Michigan, because Michigan is who we played. So if you don't know, folks, when I missed 3 weeks a few weeks ago, is because I coached our 12-year-old Tri-Cities Little League All-Star team that my son Michael was on. I've been the manager for the last few years of it. We last year won state. Well, at 11U, it just ends at state. But at 12U, if you win state, you go to regional. And if you win the regional, you go to the Little League World Series in Williamsport, which is all ESPN is showing right now. So, and I'm sorry, but I'm just going to run with this, Roger.
Go ahead.
So, we won state again this year. Woo-hoo. Yep. We went to the regional. The first time in the 65-year history of Tri-Cities Little League that a state has gotten to go to the regional. The reason it was the first time ever is because 4 years before, when my older son Jack's team was in the state tournament,
right,
they lost to Jackie Robinson West, who, if you recall, then went on to win the whole thing. They lost in the international game, but they won the U.S. championship in Williamsport, only to find out that the guys that ran the league had fudged all the league's boundaries and brought in a bunch of kids to make that team that year. And that's why they went. So in like February of the next year, we were awarded the Illinois State Championship. So it was the second time this year that a 12-year-old team of ours had won the state tournament, but the first time that they'd won it and gotten to actually go to the regional. So we went to the regional.
Got
the
it.
Regional is awesome. It's down in Westfield, Indiana, these incredible fields. ESPN is there. They build a scaffold behind the home plate. They have scissor lifts with cameras in like four different parts of the field.
Mm-hmm.
The first few days of the games were only on the ESPN Plus app, but we literally had an ESPN broadcast crew interview us before the game, talk to us, you know, about things, and then mm-hmm. broadcast. You can still find, you can find the games on YouTube. Search Illinois versus Michigan and Illinois versus Ohio. We started out with the Michigan team first game. They scored four runs in the first inning. We never got back into it. We lost 7-2. They went on to slaughter the next three teams they played. We mm-hmm. gave them the best game. We got knocked out after two games. Michigan wins the whole thing. They go to Williamsport. Today, they had their first game in Williamsport. They've spent the week in Williamsport, Roger. It should have been us!
I know.
They spent the whole week there. They finally played today. They went down early, and they were striking out their guys, who are huge hitters.
Mm-hmm.
They played Idaho, and Idaho had a pitcher, man. That dude was heaving it, and it's a small kid, too. Mm-hmm. Usually you see, I think, oh God, what team? Some team has a kid who's like 6'2", 238 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like an adult man who's allegedly 12 playing on the team.
Exactly.
I believe he is 12. But anyways, so they played today. They went. They were down 4-0 to Idaho. Going into the bottom of the sixth inning, their last at bat, they're down 4-1. Michigan won.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I was just watching it when
that?
It was 4-0. No, I'm watching the replay. And it said 4-0.
Yeah.
And the Michigan pitcher twice threw way over the catcher.
Yeah. Yeah,
the second time, the batter had just come up to bat, and the first pitch was way over his head, and the batter dropped the bat and ran to first.
Let me tell you a little
story. What is that rule?
That's the drop third strike. They have that in Major League Baseball.
No, it wasn't a third strike. It was, they had a new batter had just, maybe I was too in awe.
Wait, explain to me what happens again.
So it's like a new batter comes to bat.
Uh-huh.
And the pitcher throws a wild pitch. Because the pitch before it, he threw a wild pitch. And the batter, see, now I'm all confused.
Well, either.
Never mind.
There's a couple possibilities.
I was so.
If you think a kid went to base before he got an actual walk.
Right.
A, it could have been a strikeout, because if the catcher drops the ball
right.
on a
well,
third
he never
strike,
had it. Yeah.
And the base is open, then he could run. So if the kid ran,
he ran.
Then it was a drop third strike, probably. Or Little League Baseball has adopted what Major League Baseball has, and if you are intentionally walking somebody, you can just tell the umpire we're intentionally walking him. They don't have to throw the pitches, and the guy just has
oh, he didn't tell him anything. He just threw over everyone's head.
Well, maybe it was ball four. Maybe
almost.
Maybe he missed a
couple. Being the umpire.
Sometimes they get a little wild. Now, let me tell you this story.
Right.
So the kid that started pitching for Michigan, and
mm-hmm.
Mike on line one, hold on one moment. I want to get to you about NDAs. Actually, hold on a couple moments because we got to do the news.
Yeah, I got to do
news,
yeah.
And I got to do a live read. Everybody's yelling at me.
That's all right.
Just got to talk about Michigan. The kid that started pitching for Michigan today, I forget his first name. His last name is Hill. He pitched a little bit against us. He was wild. We got him out quick.
Okay.
But in the first inning, he hit a bomb off of us. A bomb. And he hit more home runs. I mean, their top of the lineup is lights out. He was pitching today.
Yeah.
They were interviewing his family. He is the third boy in that family to play in the Little Stinkin' League World Series.
Oh, my God.
That's a record for them. Now, here's the thing about that, though. Here's
what?
The problem I had with Michigan. Now, I'm rooting for them because they beat us.
Right.
And if they beat everybody else, I'm going to feel really good about us, right?
Right.
I'm gonna
Since you gave them the best game they had.
We gave them the best game they had until today. They had a really good game today.
All right.
But these kids that they're interviewing, they've been there before. So during our game against Michigan, when we get to second, third inning, and we're trying to claw back. They got up 4-0 on us.
Mm-hmm.
We made it 4-2, and we were getting runners on base every inning. We're taking mm-hmm. walks. We're really working things well. We just couldn't get the big hit when we needed it. But we get a couple innings in, and we have this long at bat with this one kid. Keeps falling off pitches, and so I'm in the dugout. Michael, my son, is catching, and he always looks over at me, and I mm-hmm. signal the pitch, and I start hearing this kid call out, "Watch the curveball," or you know, watch inside, something like that.
Wait, who's calling it out?
A kid up in the bleachers. And so
he's stealing your signs.
I realize it. And then on the next one, the next pitch, I heard this. And so on the next pitch, I go to put my hand down. I see the kid. He's right on the angle above Michael's head in the bleachers. He turns his head to see. And now I'm pissed.
Oh, man.
Because that's BS. You can't do that crap.
Yeah.
So I call timeout, and I go talk to the umpire, and I said, those kids up there are calling out my signs, and that can't happen. And I was mad. And he said, hold on. And he talked to the people behind. They had an official go up there and tell the kid, you can't do that stuff or you're getting kicked out. That's one of the jerks that they were interviewing on the show today. That's one
no.
of the brothers of this guy. Yes! Hate him. I want Michigan to win, but I hate that kid.
I see a court battle.
I'm going to sue him. If we couldn't win it, I'm going to sue him until I get what I want.
You should.
No, I should not.
You own part of that trophy.
No,
they stole your signs.
Roger, we couldn't hit the damn baseball. And if you can't hit the damn baseball, you can't win the game. And when they were hitting all the home runs in the first inning, they weren't stealing anything. They were just hitting the hell out of the ball. Okay, we're late for the news.
It's my angry groan.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate the indignation. 2:35 in the morning. Mike, as soon as the news is over, we'll get right to you. We'll talk a little bit more about NDAs and Omarosa at 312-981-7200. First, let's check the headlines with Roger Battis. We're actually in here shaking it. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you here until 5 a.m. It's going fast. It's already 2:40. Mike has called in and held for quite a while, and I appreciate it. Mike, you're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Matt. I wanted to tell you that Donald Trump did not hire Omarosa to work in his White House and his administration. Us, the American people, we are the ones who hired Omarosa. And we hired her to work in our White House, in our government. And as far as this non-disclosure agreement, there's no reason why she should have to non-disclose anything. She was a government employee. Not only is she allowed to talk about what she did, she's supposed to talk about what she did. She's supposed to tell us what was going on in our government when she was employed by us. And this whole thing about, oh, well, we have to have confidentiality so people have confidence to know they can give frank advice to the president. That's all bogus BS. Just remember what the cops tell us all the time and the prosecutors tell us all the time. If you got nothing to hide, you got nothing to worry about. So talk, bucko.
All right, Mike.
We all want to keep everything secret. Oh, we can't tell you. Why not? What are they hiding from us? What are they doing? I'll tell you what they're doing, although you'll probably cut me off.
Well,
they're sodomizing us, the American people.
Don't say
that's what they're doing to us. They're sodomizing us, and they don't want us to know.
Okay.
You still there?
I am, Mike. I am. I am. I am. You're painting a picture there, sir. I'm going to let you go, Mike. Thank you so much for calling in. I do appreciate it. I will say this. He's absolutely right, and that's a very good point. You are an employee of all of us. Now, listen, we didn't hire her because you and I didn't get a vote on that decision. We got a vote on who the president was, but then they get to do their own hiring. Some have to be approved by Congress, some don't, whatever. But he brought her in to his administration. His administration was brought in by the American people, and we pay the taxes that pay all of their salaries. So, yes, you're absolutely right. We have a right to know what was going on in there, and they should all have a right to tell what was going on in there. But what I was saying was I totally understand him wanting NDAs. Whether or not those are enforceable or not, I have no idea. Judges are going to be ruling on that. And lawsuits are going to fly, I'm sure, as more and more administration officials want to write their books and tell their stories about what they did in there. Like most administrations have people that do some of that. But listen, it's a very good point. I don't like the picture that was painted at the end, but it's a very good point. Anybody that works for the government worked for us. And we should have a right to know if they want to tell us what happened in there. And you know, instead of an NDA, there are things that should be classified. You know, if there's advice that needs to be given or whatever, there are certain things that are classified, certain things that we don't find out till long after or in the presidential papers and things like that. And, you know, I disagree with the whole, if you're not doing anything bad, you got nothing to worry about. That's not always true. You can be making controversial decisions that would affect things, different things like that or whatever. But, you know, we want our listen, we elect our politicians. We entrust them to take care of certain things. We're not going to know every single thing that they do. Absolutely, we should have oversight. Absolutely, there should be transparency. I'm just saying, I totally get why Donald Trump wants people to sign non-disclosure agreements. You don't want them there just for the idea of, hey, I was at the White House, here's my story to sell you. I get that. But I also agree that, you know, there should be a freedom of people working for the people.
10 years later, they were at $14,900.
Taxes have gone through the roof. There's no doubt they keep doing that, and that is a big problem here in Illinois. I'll agree with you on that, Robert. Let's get to Randy real quick here. Randy, you're on 720 WGN.
Hey, I think Amorosa did a good thing to protect herself, because since Trump's been in office, he's averaging about six misleading claims every day, and has only been in office for 558 days. And those 558 days, he spent over one-third of his time at his own golf courses, and he complained about Obama being gone for a couple of weeks, going back to Hawaii. So she did the right thing to cover her behind, because she knew that he was constantly lying or misleading people about what's going on.
Thank you very much, Randy. I appreciate it. Here's the problem, though. She's telling the public how great he is. So that's a real stain on her credibility, that she spent, when it was convenient for her, when it was profitable for her, she would do nothing but tell us how great he is. Then when she gets fired, now she's telling the truth, so she would say, about how bad he is. And then she's got tapes to back it up. I understand her wanting to cover her butt, because you know that they were going to tear her apart. But the credibility issue is a tough one. Joe in Downers Grove, real quick, we got to get to the news. Joe, what's going on?
Oh, fantastic. Hey, good show, kiddo. And I applaud your direct commentary here. The one point I'll make, although I was stunned by the tax scenario in Wisconsin, in Illinois. Okay, you go into the Situation Room, which is a disclosure-free zone, if you will. There's not a law against it, but I guess there should be. You don't take any phones, any recording devices, blah, 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 blah. And that's what Omarosa, I almost said Obama, and she's one and the same with Obama, took into that room. It's a direct violation of, not unlawful, but it shouldn't have happened. That's her first major, major mistake.
Joe, was she actually in the Situation Room, or was she just in meetings?
Pardon me?
I don't know. Was she in an actual high-level meeting, you're saying in the Situation Room or something like that? I don't know that she was ever. I haven't read enough to know.
It's my understanding. There's one Situation Room in the White House where you go into it, and it's a foregone conclusion. This is discreet. You have a lead-lined room, you know, that type scenario.
Well, if she was doing that, then that's really bad. I mean, I think it's debatable whether or not she should have been recording anything at all, of course. But if there's a room where it's lead-lined walls or whatever, because nothing can come out of this room and she's recording in there, then that's terrible. And she shouldn't have been doing that, because it is about the work of the people and the work of the government. And if she's recording what are truly private conversations in truly private meetings where we're dealing with, you know, very important things, not just the day-to-day workings of the government, then she shouldn't have been doing that. Joe, thanks so much for the call. We are late for the news. It's 3:03 in the morning. The Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet. Weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say, play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Let's get the news now, Roger Badish.
Partly cloudy, 72 at O'Hare. A report out on the handling of sex abuse cases in Chicago public schools. It shows a system-wide failure to grasp the extent of the problem and allow predators to go unpunished. CPS CEO Janice Jackson telling WGN TV's Tom and Bradley they've already taken steps to deal with the problem, including retraining staff.
The way that will work is that our principals have undergone several hours of training this summer, and then they're going to be responsible for training the adult.
So all the professionals will have training before the students are back.
Yep. The report also says CPS didn't ensure its sexual abuse policies were being implemented or effective. Hobart Police Lieutenant James Gonzalez talked to the media yesterday about the interview he and another officer did with William Lansky, the man now charged with murder of Hobart attorney T. Edward Page.
He expressed no remorse for his actions whatsoever, and he knew that his actions were wrong at the time he shot and killed Judge Page. In my opinion, Bill Lansky is a murderous coward that has left Judge Page's family, friends, and the Lansky family to deal with an emotional path of destruction, much like a hurricane.
Police say Lansky's only statement to motive was that he was unhappy about how long Page had taken in addressing some of his tax issues. President Trump delivering a new threat to strip security clearances after doing so to former CIA Director John Brennan. Opposition to Trump's action growing from both parties. Two letters from dozens of former CIA officers criticizing Trump's move. ABC's Luis Martinez is at the Pentagon.
It's an unprecedented list. You're talking about former senior intelligence officials, Robert Gates, William Webster, DNI James Clapper. It's just a very impressive list, and they all came together. Most of them have served under different administrations, Democratic or Republican, and they just said that they're united in this. They said that the actions by the White House, they just see this as an attempt to stifle free speech.
That's ABC's Luis Martinez. South Suburban Lansing getting closer to settling a lawsuit filed by the family of a 15-year-old boy who was pinned to the ground, threatened by an off-duty police officer. More from WGN's Steve Bertrand.
The officer pinned 15-year-old Jordan Brunson to the ground and threatened to kill him after Brunson and a friend were found on the officer's lawn. The friend got away but stayed close enough to videotape the event, and millions of people watched it on social media. The Tribune says Lansing has agreed to a $70,000 settlement. It's expected to be approved by the village board on Tuesday. Steve Bertrand, WGN News.
We'll check sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Okay, how frustrating is it to try and hang pictures that are both centered and level? So much you avoid doing it, right? I'll bet you have some pretty cool pictures from your last vacation. Or how about a stack of your kids' art projects? Or even a blind shelf from that craft show that you went to? And all of them are still waiting to be hung, right? Then you need Never Measure. Never Measure is the product that'll change how you look at doing all those tasks. It's one easy tool that will center, space, and level. You heard right. No having to read the small lines on a measuring tape ever again. Or trying to figure out what's half of 29 5/8 inches. With Never Measure, anyone can quickly and easily center, level, and hang pictures, sconces, mirrors, or even do wall collages. So go to NeverMeasure.com and watch the videos, because once you see them, you'll see why Never Measure is the one tool you must have for your home. Never Measure is veteran-owned and made right here in the USA. Want to learn more? Then go to NeverMeasure.com. And if you want to buy one for yourself, or better yet, a gift, go to NeverMeasure.com.
If you want to stay on top of your health, one simple thing to do
is take the pledge to go and get screened for the cancers that might affect you.
So stand up, cancer, and take the pledge at
GetScreenNow.org. It only takes a minute to take care of yourself,
and nothing rhymes with org.
Talk to your doctor about your health and screenings that are right for you.
Checking WGN Sports, the White Sox over Kansas City 9-3. Those two teams playing again tonight at 5:35. The pregame starts with Andy Mazur. First pitch at 6:10 with Ed Farmer and Darren Jackson right here on 720 WGN. Cubs edging out Pittsburgh 1-0 in Pittsburgh. Those two teams playing again tonight. NFL preseason action finds the Bears in Denver for a game tonight. Soccer action, Chicago Fire against Montreal in Montreal, and the WNBA will find the Chicago Sky in Indiana. Checking WGN traffic, your travel times out there right now on the area expressways, tollways, and highways, even with a lot of overnight road construction. Not too bad over on the Veterans Tollway northbound between the Stevenson and the Reagan. That's now a 27-minute trip because of the construction. On the southbound side between the Reagan and the Stevenson, it's an 11-minute trip. Everything else looking pretty good for personalized traffic on demand. Get the Traffic Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFF. IX Chicago. Your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, mostly sunny today, high near 84. The same thing for Sunday. Temperatures around the area right now, 72 at O'Hare and Roselle, 74 in Midway and along the lakefront, and your Lake Michigan water temperature at 80. Winds out of the north at 7. Humidity all the way up at 91%. I'm Roger Battish in the WGN newsroom, ready to join the conversation whenever a story changes on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning, good night. How we kept the twilight. It's gonna be all right. We don't even have to try. It's always a good time.
Matt Bubala here with you, 720 WGN. 312-981-7200 is the number if you want to jump in. It's been fun taking some calls with you guys tonight. I want to catch up on some of the texts from earlier that we didn't get to. We were talking with Eddie Commenda from the Northwest Herald, NWHerald.com, about what's going on out in Algonquin Township, where the Algonquin Township Highway Commissioner is upset with the Northwest Herald. So he put out on their big marquee, "The Northwest Herald is fake news." And so we talked a little bit with Eddie about that and what, you know, the whole thing about fake news and the issue seems to be, for the most part, when people cry fake news, is just that they're not happy with what's being reported. Not necessarily that those facts are wrong. Here's the true facts. It's why are you reporting those facts instead of these facts about how good we are? It's kind of the alternative facts Kellyanne Conway issue in a way. 815 wrote, "News generally doesn't report people saying good things about other people. They report people saying crap about others, just like they report accidents, fires, shootings, etc. Occasionally reporting what are considered to be feel-good stories." I think there's something to that. I don't think that the news purposely looks for what's terrible in the world. It's just that those things in the world are more what makes news, right? I mean, shootings are news. Robberies are news. Crime is news. But also highway commissioners and townships and everything else, that's news too. But you're right. Usually when you're calling somebody up for a quote, it's not because there's some great story. Now, I got interviewed by the Elgin Courier News when the Little League team was making its run. So I got to, you know, I got that. There are those stories too. But the ones that, you know, not necessarily interest us more, but that maybe shock us more, that maybe we're curious about, are the ones that generally aren't about the greatest things. 301 writes, "Deep Throat released his info in secrecy to bring wrong things to light, not publicly to get attention and sell a book. Big difference there, I think." Well, you're absolutely right about that. You are absolutely right about that. 815 says, "She's smarter than Trump, Matt. She planned ahead, way ahead." Well, I think that's true, but I don't think that that's necessarily a positive. You'd like to think that people go into the administration, whether you love it or hate it, with the right intentions, with the intentions of making a difference, of doing something positive, et cetera, et cetera. Now, maybe Omarosa went in there with the greatest of intentions and 2 months in said, "This is a blank show and it's going to go down. I'm going to get bounced out of here. They're going to paint me terribly. I'm going to protect myself." Maybe that's what it was, or maybe it was, "I'm going to make some money out of this." And then somebody gave us a big picture of townships. There are lots of townships. There is a lot of local government, that's for sure. 312-981-7200 is the number. I want to jump back on Little League for a second. Tell you a story. So the Little League World Series on, by the way, so if you watched the Michigan game at all tonight, you would have seen a picture of me and our team. Because when they were playing the Michigan game, I think they showed everybody from the regional that they were in, all the state champions. I think ESPN gives them a little love just by showing a picture from when they won state. So our little Tri-Cities Little League team got a little love on ESPN today when that picture was on. There's a story going, a part of it. So Australia played the other day, their first game. Australia played against Mexico. It was a really good game. Mexico ended up winning 3-2. I think they kind of walked them off. They got a hit that brought in some runs at the end. But Australia is playing, so in Little League All-Stars, you have your team of however many players, and then you have a manager and two coaches, and that's all you're allowed in the dugout, the manager and two coaches. If you have other coaches, they're not allowed in the dugout. You're not allowed to talk to them during the game. They're very strict about that. And Australia was playing with just two coaches. They had a kid coaching first base. Because you have to have an adult in the dugout at all times. That's a rule. So with only two coaches, they had one guy at third and they had a kid doing first. And the story was because the manager of the team had been suspended for the duration of the tournament. In their first game of their regional in Australia, which they ended up winning to get to the Little League World Series. So the rule is if you have 12 players or less, each player, the minimum mandatory play requirement is you have to at least with 12 or less players, each player must play 6 consecutive outs in the field and get one at bat. If you have 13 or more players, and I believe you can have 15 tops, maybe it's 14, But if you have 13 or more players, the only play requirement is every player must receive at least one at-bat. Last year in the Little League World Series, or the build-up to the Little League World Series, there was a manager from a team, I can't remember from where, who did not get all of his players in. And what was called for was a one-game suspension. They were losing, and if he had put these players in, it wasn't going to help the team. So he said, I'll take the suspension. I'd rather give my team a better chance. Little League was very upset with that because the manager purposely flaunted the rules for the benefit of his team. The rules are there for the kids so that they all, who are all making this effort to work, their parents are paying the extra money, they're driving them to all these practices. Every kid should at least, according to Little League, get this minimum play. You have to at least bat once. And a coach flaunted that rule, saying, I'll take the suspension, it's fine, and helped his team out. So they came down hard on that. And this year, and we got lectured about it greatly, if you don't get that mandatory play met, you will be done for the season. So when we started out with a district tournament, then we had a sectional tournament, then we won the state tournament, then we went to the regional tournament where we got knocked out, and if we would have won that, we would have gone on to the Little League World Series. If in districts I would have had a game where I didn't play all my kids, I would have been done, and they would have had to go with the two coaches for however far they went. So Australia, in their first game of their regional, they're up 5-2 in the bottom of the fifth. They're batting. If they hold the lead in the top of the sixth, they won't bat in the bottom of the sixth. They only play six innings of Little League. The bottom of the fifth, the coach realizes he's got to get one more kid in, his own son, who's only nine, youngest kid in the Little League World Series. He's only nine. He hasn't batted yet. And in what I read, he said, well, I could have just batted him out of order. I realized if this Matthew kid didn't get on base, my son wouldn't come up, and I'd be in trouble. I could have just batted them out of order and then taken a two-game suspension for that, or gotten called out for that. But instead, I did the right thing. He didn't get on base. We notified them, and now he's suspended for the rest of the tournament. The problem I have with his, because they tried to defend, they wrote all these letters, it wasn't intentional, it was his own son, he didn't do it on purpose, blah, 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 blah. If he knew that that boy had to get a hit for his son to come up, his son should have batted for that boy. He could have pinch hit him right there. I don't know if there's something else to that story, if he didn't realize it till that kid was actually already at the plate and then it was too late. But if he said, oh, I could have batted them out of order, he could have just substituted his son for that boy who was hitting.
How could he not? All right, I'm not a manager. You're a manager.
Right.
You've managed a team.
Right.
Somebody in your dugout is keeping the book, or is the manager keeping the book?
It depends on your team. So in our early games, we had a coach outside of the dugout keeping the book. Then when we got to the state tournament, they're like, you can't talk to him anymore. You cannot talk to anybody outside of your dugout.
Oh, okay.
We always had him sitting by the dugout, and he'd give us stats. Here's where the kid hit it last time, all this stuff. Then once we got to state, they're like, you can't be talking to him.
Okay.
So then we had to start controlling things more ourselves. But what I always had was a sheet that has all of our players.
Right.
It's like a spreadsheet. It has all of our players written out by hand, and then have substitution spots underneath each of them. And I would have all my players, all my subs that had to get in, and I would do check marks so that I always knew, okay, I'm good, everybody got in. And basically, for me, second time around the batting order, I got them all in.
All right.
There were very few instances where I didn't just automatically put them in a certain spot, because you don't want to get to the last out of the game if you're losing. Especially, not only is it a concern about do you get everybody in, but it's like if you get to the end of the game and you're losing, to have somebody have to come off the bench to hit is a very tough position to put them in. You've been sitting there, you're cold, it's a tough at bat. You don't want them coming in the bottom of the sixth with two outs when you absolutely, you want somebody that's been playing, that's already had some at bats, or your better hitters to have those opportunities.
Sure. No, so, I understand.
So I always got them in early.
Yeah. So then this manager should have known, because it's your responsibility to know.
Absolutely.
Should have known before that inning started who on their team still had not gotten in the game.
Absolutely. And I don't know what they did in Australia, but here they instituted a rule that in the fourth inning, the umpires would talk to each team and say, you have to get these people in. you have these, and they might even ask you, where are they going in? You have to tell me where you're hitting these batters.
Right.
Because the not batting in the sixth is no excuse. If a game gets shortened because of a slaughter rule, this year it was 15 runs. If you had a 15-run lead after three innings, the game was over. If you have a 10-run or more lead after four innings, the game is over.
I got
you. if you beat a team 15-0 after three innings and some players didn't get in, you didn't get in trouble for that.
Okay.
But if you won a game that went the 5.5 innings,
mm-hmm,
and you didn't get everybody in like this Australia guy didn't, that's on you. Because they scored five runs, so in five innings, they batted around a couple of times.
Yeah.
For sure. He had that second opportunity to get everybody in. He didn't do it, whether it's just because he missed it or mistook it or whatever. How do you know your own son didn't? How do you not know that your own son didn't bat in that game? I mean, give me a break. You know that.
Yeah.
And you got the lead, for goodness sake.
Exactly.
Pinch hit him for whoever. I know you want to get some more runs. You want to build that lead and get some insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't blame them for suspending him the entire time. You have to crack down on that. Last year, somebody completely flaunted the rule, and now he's all, you know, they shouldn't have done it. They really need to relook at it. There's been a couple managers that have gotten nailed on it that have been like, it's too harsh. That's, you know, how's that, you know, they're trying to argue that's hurting the kids by taking their manager away. Well, manager, you should have been smarter and done it the right way that they emphasized over and over again. The interesting thing about, so this guy now is just sitting in the stands at the games, and they took an early lead and they lost their first game to Mexico, but he's sitting in the stands, and so they're interviewing him about it, and he's, oh, it was so innocent, and, you know, that was their ruling, they wouldn't budge, it is what it is, but it shouldn't have been this way, whatever.
Yeah.
He's a pilot for, I think, for Qantas. He flew the team to Williamsport.
Wow.
He flew the, like, 777 from Sydney or wherever to Williamsport. How crazy is that?
That is pretty
crazy. He actually flew the team there. So even though he can't coach, he still had some control over things.
Well, he probably had already, like, knocked out from his schedule that time, hoping they would go as far as they could in the tournament. So he probably already had that time off. He just didn't expect to be spending it up in the stands, I guess.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
312-981-7200 is the number. Joe is on 720 WGN. Let's get Joe saved up there, and we'll get him on the air right now. Hey, Joe, it's Matt. You're on 720 WGN. Good morning.
Matt, your tonight's show is phenomenal. Listen, I managed my son's baseball team 15 years ago, okay? And I appreciate what you're talking about tonight. It's called a red tape that our current government is trying to eliminate a little bit, to eliminate some of the, you know, I'm looking for an adjective, but I can't, you know, can't say it on the air. But, you know, there's too much of politics in baseball nowadays. Let a guy go out there and lead a team, give them the basics, you know, how to hit, how to field, so forth and so on, and play the game and enjoy it, if you will. That's my comment, kiddo.
All right, I appreciate it, Joe. Thank you very much. I understand what he's saying, but listen, the rules are all there because of the adults, not because of the kids. And Little League has had to enforce and put stuff like this in because people don't do things the right way, because the adults don't do things the right way. So that's why they have to crack down and do this on the guy. I don't feel bad for the guy or for the team. The team is at the Little League World Series. I'm not going to feel bad for them because the manager's sitting up in the bleachers instead of down on the field with them. Ray in Arlington Heights, good morning, sir. How are you?
Matt, I'm great. Roger, you guys are great together. I'm never flying Qantas again.
Why?
I'm outraged after hearing your story. I've got to tell you a quick Little League story. I'll try to keep it under 60 seconds.
Sure.
I was 13 years old, living in a suburb. They had Varsity 1 and Varsity 2. Varsity 1, the good players. Varsity 2, not good.
Right.
I elected not to try out for Varsity 1. Happy as a clam in Varsity 2, number one pitcher, first baseman, hitting .400. Get a phone call one night from my manager. I've been traded to Varsity 1 because he wants his two sons together on a Varsity 2 team. We win the first half of the season. All our good guys go on vacation in the second half, but we're still in the championship game against the second half winner of Varsity 1. I'm the worst guy on the team, two innings a game, one at bat, and done. You know, and it's painful. You know, I'm trying, but I'm just not that good.
Yeah.
championship game. He's not, I'm on the bench. Bottom of the last inning, we're down one run, bases loaded. He's got to bat me. I go up to the plate. He calls me down. He's the manager is coaching third base. He goes, Ray, this guy's really bringing it today. The kid pitching was like 14 years old and 6'3". I mean, it was like a young Randy Johnson.
Right.
He goes, why don't you lean in? And I go, what do you mean?
He goes, just wear it. Just take it, Ray.
He goes, lean in. And I said, do you mean like get hit? And he goes, just take it out the shoulder. And I said, I don't think so. So we lost the game by one run.
What a jerk.
Well, he was teaching me a life lesson.
Which is what, Ray?
Lean in.
I thought maybe it was take one for the team.
He was teaching you that in life we have to make choices about who we really want to be working with, and that that coach is not one of those guys. Yeah, I don't know why the phones are getting so echoey on us. Thanks so much for the call, Ray. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Just says the listeners were requesting some Aretha. There she is. Aretha Franklin, the Queen of Soul, passed away this week at the age of 76. I'm actually excited. I hope, I haven't had a chance to read a lot about Aretha this week. I'm hoping there's something really good and long in the Sunday papers this weekend. But I need to catch up and read more about her because I didn't know a lot about her. And there's a lot about what she did for other people and how she commanded a room and other stories coming out about her that are really amazing and neat to read. So we'll have to do more of that this weekend as the stories tend to make it into the Sunday paper and get more attention then. Still coming up, Urban Meyer, the Ohio State coach, and how this story is getting worse and worse and worse. Also, Apple Inc., not Apple Computer anymore, hit the $1 trillion capitalization mark, I think 2 weeks ago. Since then, they've kept climbing. There are a number of companies, and I just want to take a moment to realize how big that is. That they hit a trillion, what that means, and how big they've gotten since then is pretty insane. 3:30 in the morning, let's check the news headlines with Roger Battish. Live from the Allstate Skyline Studios, Matt Bubala here with you on 720 WGN. Thanks very much for participating and being with us tonight, everybody. We appreciate all the calls and the texts at 312-981-7200. Just this week, Jessica, our producer, got a new Apple computer. A new notebook, a laptop, like I have. I buy all Apple products. It's all I buy. I got hooked on them in college. I've stayed with them ever since, Roger. About 10 years ago, I think it was around 10 years ago, Apple stock was, and this is after the iPod came out, I think. I want to say the iPod had come out. And so they were really starting to, you know, Apple was basically almost bankrupt in the late 80s, early 90s. And then
they had an extremely small market share.
Still do of personal computing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Steve Jobs had been fired from the company and he came back years later, reinvented the iMac, the colorful iMacs that came out at the time became very popular. Then he brought the iPod and the iPhone, and everything else, and iPad. And he died a few years ago, but the company really went on a tear. About 10 years or so ago, I think it was soon after the iPod was introduced, Apple stock was at about $10 a share. And I bought 100 shares.
Whoa, money bags.
And then a year or two later, it was at $150 a share, I think, and I bought 50 more shares.
Wow.
Now, I don't still have all those shares, but a number of years later, it split 7-for-1.
7 shares for 1 share?
1 share became 7.
Okay.
So if you think about that, my 150 shares then became... What, 950 shares?
150 shares, did you say? You started 150.
Times 7.
735, over 1,000.
So 1,050.
Yeah.
So it became 1,050 shares, which are now worth $214 each. Now, as I said.
College fund.
Some things in life have gotten in the way, and there's been some selling over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been the best investment of my life, by far. By far. And I've been lucky in that over the last few years, every time I've had to sell a little off, the stock has gone back up. So the total valuation of what we have has always remained relatively constant.
Very
which
cool.
Which has been very nice.
Yeah.
Apple closed on Friday at $217.58 a share. It is now worth $1.051 trillion.
Wow.
About 2 weeks ago that it went over a trillion.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first company ever to do so. I thought they would dip back quickly, but they've actually ramped up.
You mean fall back?
I thought they would fall back to under a trillion.
Yeah.
And you know, there was some debate not that long ago about whether they actually would be the first one to get to it. There was a question about Amazon or Google, which is mm-hmm. now Alphabet. Market value in billions of dollars. Now, how long ago is this from? This is a statistics page. This has got to be a couple of weeks ago because it only has Apple at $926 billion. At the time, Apple was $926 billion. Amazon was $777. Google's parent Alphabet was $766. Microsoft, $750. Facebook, $541. Alibaba, which is a Chinese, right? Amazon type
company.
Yeah,
right.
Mm-hmm. $499 billion. Berkshire Hathaway, $491. J.P. Morgan Chase, $387 billion. ExxonMobil, there's a traditional one that we would think of being large, $344 billion. So it goes down pretty quick. That's the rankings of, you know, of some of the top ones.
Right.
And it goes down in the, you know, go to like the top 13 there, went down into the 300 billions. Visa's worth $295 billion, Wells Fargo, $265. So since Apple crossed the trillion mark just a few weeks ago, it's added enough to now be at 1.051 trillion, which means, if I'm doing my math correctly, and I don't know that I am, that since it crossed the trillion mark, it has gained another $51 billion in capitalization. 1.051 trillion would be $1.051 billion, right?
Yeah.
So in just those last 2 weeks, since it crossed a trillion, which is insane, it's gained $51 more billion in capitalization. With just the money, with just that value that they've added, if they took that $51 billion and sold off their stock or, you know, cashed it out, whatever, they could buy...
Me?
No.
I'll go for $51 billion.
They could buy Ford at $38 billion.
Wow.
That's what Ford's worth right now.
Hmm.
The money Apple has added to their value in the last couple of weeks, they could buy Ford. They could buy... What do you think Groupon's worth? What do you think? What kind of change do you think you'd have to throw?
Groupon's not worth a lot, I don't think. I think it's worth maybe $15
million. $2.5 billion for
Groupon. What? Groupon?
$2.5 billion.
No way.
Yep. Tesla, which has had a bad couple of weeks, Elon Musk has been in the news. With the $51 billion they've made in the last couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
they could just about buy Tesla.
Wow.
Elon's talked about taking it public. Apple could just take it over. American Airlines. What do you think it would cost Apple to just say, hey, American, you're Apple Airlines?
Would you say Tesla was about 50?
Tesla was $50 billion.
I'd say American Airlines, $43
billion. $17.4 billion.
Man, how can I be off on all this stuff? That much?
Yep. Yep. ExxonMobil, couldn't buy them with that. $331 billion.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't get them. Nike, $127 billion. Twitter. Apple could buy Twitter twice with
easily
the amount they've made in the past couple of weeks. Just with the amount they've made in the past couple of weeks. Twitter's at $24 billion right now. Facebook's at $500 billion. I don't understand how Twitter doesn't make as much money as Facebook, because all we talk about it seems
Twitter, to the best of my knowledge, because I use both fairly often, I think Twitter doesn't use ads as
certainly not as
proficiently as Facebook,
yeah,
you know, or as often. Like if one pops up on your timeline, if you say, I don't like this ad, it pretty much, you don't get any more ads for at least a week. Mm. But on Facebook, you're always getting ads.
United Airlines, $22 billion. Hasbro, the toy maker,
mm-hmm.
$12 billion.
That might be a nice mix. Electronic toys? Mm-hmm. I mean, I know they don't need another company to make electronic toys, but it'd be kind of neat, you know.
Our sale to Sinclair fell through. Tribune Media, mm-hmm. our radio station, all the TV stations were going to be sold to Sinclair Media. That fell through with the FCC. If Apple wanted to pick us up, it would only cost them $3 billion. That's literally pocket change to them. It's tip money.
Yeah.
For tip money, they could have
mm-hmm.
us.
That's right.
Netflix, $137 billion for Netflix. Think about the valuations of these new technology companies versus some of the old school companies, you know, Ford, American Airlines, United Airlines.
Yeah.
Microsoft is worth $824 billion right now. So they're close too.
And I wouldn't
have thought of them mm-hmm. as doing as well anymore. You know, because
why not?
Well, because computing has really changed, don't you think? Apple is not becoming a trillion-dollar company because of MacBooks or iPads. They're becoming it because of the iPhone. Microsoft does not have a foothold in that space.
No, they don't. But I would think that it would have been more than that given their foothold in the computing world. They have such a much larger share of the marketplace, and they are more giving as far as outside game developers and software developers.
Right.
They've given the Microsoft language away for outside developers to continue to bring out products that use that platform, whereas Apple is very protective of their platform.
Here's an interesting thing I want to tell you about this. So Microsoft is third in line right now, $824 billion. What's interesting to look at for me is the price-to-earnings ratio and how companies trade. Now, a lot of these tech stock companies trade at these insane multiples. So if a company was making, say, $10 per share, but they were trading for $100 per share, then they'd be trading at 10 times their earnings, right? Apple, as big as they've gotten, and as big as, you know, you think about how expensive that stock is, they're only trading at a price-to-earnings multiple of 19. So for every dollar Apple makes per mm-hmm. share, the share is worth $19, basically, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So they're trading at a 19 times multiple. Microsoft, which is very possibly going to be the second one to hit a trillion, is trading at a 50 multiple.
Wow.
So that's really high. So if you think, that Apple stock's going to tank eventually, it's right. not overpriced if you look at it in that way.
Okay.
Amazon, which is second in line, Amazon right now worth $918 billion. Their price to earnings ratio, the way that stock has been inflated,
right.
149.
So they could fall farther faster?
Theoretically, if they have a miss or they... But you know what's funny is Amazon didn't make money forever. Ever!
Mm-hmm.
They still pay no money back to their investors. There's no yield. There's no return. You know, there's no quarterly dividend.
Oh.
And they're trading at 149.
Wow.
Netflix, which is only worth $137 billion, so relatively low, they're trading at $143.
I don't know how they stay in business then. I don't know. Or at least how they continue to make money to stay in business.
You make enough to keep it going.
Yeah,
that's
true.
You got your investors' money and things like that.
Yeah.
United Airlines only trading at 11, so that makes sense. Twitter trading at 105. So Apple, as expensive as it is and as much money as they have, it's kind of a value buy in a way. I mean, people are arguing. I've read people say, it's going to be the first $2 trillion company. And I'm thinking, this is crazy. And I can't believe how much it's gone up in the last couple of weeks. I mean, I really thought it was going to, you know, face a correction. And it very well might still face a correction at some point. But on Friday, it went up $4.26 a share, which is crazy when you think about how valuable it is. But it's still, when you look at these other companies, in that sector and the what they're trading at, because they're considered growth companies and their potential, and so they're trading on the potential. But Apple's the one raking in all the cash, paying it back to investors, and still only trading at a 19 times multiple. It's crazy.
Very strange, which is one reason why I'm not in finance. Thank you very much.
I understand it. Robert is on 720 WGN. Good morning, Robert. How are you, sir?
Hey, everything you just talked about, I have no knowledge of. But in 1984, I got married, and I have a friend that's a billionaire, and he told me, buy Apple. I took all the money I had in the world, and I bought 10,000 shares. I still own them.
Oh.
Okay, well, now we know that Apple split for 2-for-1, and then they did a 7-for-1. Now, Apple went up to about $668 a share, and then they did a split of 2-for-1. And my dear friend, and he is a billionaire, said, don't ever sell it. Just ride it, okay? Now, I sold my home in LaGrange. I took my money, and I rent a home in Oak Brook. And when I sold my home in LaGrange 11 years ago, he goes, Rob, do you have money? I go, yeah. He goes, do you have 100 grand? I go, well, yeah. He goes, buy Amazon and don't sell it. And I bought it. And I'm very thankful to my billionaire friend who said, I told him, I go, I don't know anything about stocks. He goes, just trust me. Now, I've bought 5 stocks that have gone bonkers. I bought 3 from other friends that went into the tank. But when you start talking about Apple, I lit up because I love my Apple. And Apple, at where it is right now, is actually a good buy.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I mean, theoretically, as crazy as it sounds, it's still very got good a lot buy. Of value in it. Now, here's...
Absolutely. Robert. And Amazon, I had a friend, I told him 2 months ago, I said, if you can buy 10 shares of Amazon, buy it. He's made $32,000 in the past 2 months on just Amazon. Now, whether you sell it, I don't do that. When someone tells me to buy something and hang on to it, I do it. Everyone in my family thought I was nuts with Apple. My God, it's at 680, sell! That's what my uncle said. No, I still own it.
Right,
and that's my retirement fund. Well, thank you very much.
I got to ask you a question here. You bought $10,000 worth in 1984, or you actually bought 10,000 shares?
I bought 10,000 shares at $4. I think it was $4.69 a share.
Okay. In 1984.
1984.
And you've never sold it?
Never.
And it had the 2-for-1 split, and then it
had... I had a 2-for-1. Right now, I have I'm not trying to brag. I have north of 140,000 shares of Apple.
That's worth $30 million.
Yeah, I know what it's worth.
$30 million, Robert.
Yeah, but that's my... Again, when I sell, remember, I'm going to get hit with capital gains.
Yes, you are.
And taxes.
Yes, you are.
That's right. And depending on... Right now, like I said, one of my neighbors, and I have a dear friend that's a billionaire, and I have neighbors that are billionaires. They hate Trump, but they saved over $300 million in their taxes this year because of Trump. So they're actually hoping that Trump's going to help out the billionaires. Don't ask. I don't know. I don't understand all this stuff. All I know is I've lived a very meek life, never made over $100,000 a year. But in my retirement, I'm going to do like my neighbors. I might probably go out and buy a Ferrari, but I won't. I don't throw that.
Robert, can I ask, how old are you? How soon do you retire?
I'm 60.
Okay.
So I got 5 years. I set everything up in a Charles Schwab One account, and I dealt with Charles Schwab, and they take good care of me. I can't touch it if I want to,
right?
But I'm not going to until I'm 65. And then, well, my wife wants me to touch it because there's a lovely home here in Oak Brook that she wants to buy, and I said no.
Have you ever thought of buying a radio station?
We've got one available.
Hey, I love you guys, and I know Mr. Wirtz very well, and he's a super good guy, and he'd treat you guys very well.
Well, Robert, I got to ask. So you're like, no, we're waiting until we're 65. We're not going to buy that nice new house that your wife wants. Can I ask? Because it's a tough question because, listen, the reason you got to all this money, to $30 million, is because you were smart and you didn't waste it. You didn't spend it when something exciting came along. You didn't say, let's cash out now. But at what point do you say, you know what? I did all this. I need to start enjoying it. Why are you, if you have $30 million basically in the bank, which you do, and I know that's going to become about $18 million after all the taxes, but that's still an insane amount of money. Why wait till you're 65? Just because you feel it's more prudent, because you want to? Why not start reaping some of the benefits?
And I'm not lying about this. 11 years ago, I took $100,000 and I bought $100,000 worth of Amazon. Okay? I own that stock as well. And that stock, if you think about it, each $1,000 I put in is worth about $13,000 today. You can do the math.
Robert, start buying some stuff and enjoying life. Or are you just enjoying, or does it not mean anything to you? It's like, nope,
no. Remember,
someday and I'll use it when I need to use it.
No. The gentleman who told me to buy these stocks is a billionaire, and he said, do not cash them in until you hit 65, and you'll thank me for it. So I listened to the gentleman who gave me these tips. He's a billionaire. This guy makes over $200 million a month. There are people like that out there in the United States, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And if he has control over his money, and I don't even know the type of money I have yet, he said, trust me, Robert, wait till you're 65, then go bonkers. But listen to what I tell you, do what I tell you, and you'll thank me for it.
All right, well,
and
Robert,
that's what I'm doing.
All of us want to become multimillionaires too, so what is the latest advice? Is it still buy some Amazon, or is there anything new that your billionaire friend is
doing? Well, here, I'll give you an idea. I told a friend of mine 2 months ago, I said, Amazon is extremely high. I go, buy some Amazon. I go, I would buy Apple. Okay, and he bought some Apple and he bought some Amazon. He made $28,000 in the last 2 months on Amazon.
So he bought
not
a
bad.
Lot. He
not
bought
bad.
A, well, how much Amazon did he buy? He bought quite a bit.
10 shares. Amazon went up $28 a share, I believe, this week. So, hello. You see, you don't, and again, that's just me. I've always believed in Apple. I still believe in Apple. I still believe Apple's going to go back up to around, $400, $500, $600 a share easily in my lifetime. So, and they give you dividends. Now, I reinvest those dividends, but, please. Look at I drive a 2003 Lexus ES300. I have a 92 Lexus that's, I don't need all this fancy stuff. I live in a very small home, and I rent it, and I'm right now.
You're just enjoying knowing
that you've
got it.
I don't need to, my neighbors. My next door neighbor just paid $400,000 for a car. Why? Because he can. Does he need it? No. But you know what? It's fun to have neighbors like that because I get to drive it.
I'll bet it is. Robert, you win the weekend.
Take care, guys. Great
so
show as always. Very informative.
It.
And you just have the best show on the weekend, bar none.
You're too kind, Robert. Adopt me, please.
Take care, guys.
312-981-7200. Quick break. News coming up, 720 WGN. A lot to do before we get out of here at 5, including after the 4:30 news. We'll check in with our friend Chris Gebhardt and talk about that probe that's headed to the sun. 4:01 in the morning. Here's the news. 4:08 in the morning. We're live from the Allstate Skyline Studios from the 18th floor here at 303 East Wacker Drive. We have a beautiful view of downtown. This would be a great place to come this weekend. Although you'd be behind windows to watch some of the Air and Water show.
Oh, but I bet you would hear it, though.
Yes.
Even
I'm
with
sure
the double windows.
I'm sure you would hear it, but it'd be kind of a cool place to see it, especially from the studios we have on the other side that really face the lake. We haven't decided. I think we're going to come down on Sunday. Last year we came down and went to Theater on the Lake. The Chicago Social Club, I'll give them a little plug, did a thing last year where they sold tickets that you could buy. Tickets that include food and beer or tickets that just get you in, but they rope off this area by the Theater on the Lake that just went through a huge renovation.
Yeah.
And it is a wonderful place to sit and watch the Air and Water show. We did it last year, and it was awesome.
Great. I'm going to be working.
Good. As you should be.
Wait, what time? I start
during the day.
Well, on Sunday, I'm back. I'm back here about 5.
It's over by then. What time do you leave here? Like at 5 in the morning?
Yeah, I leave here about 5 in the morning. I'm back by 5 at night.
You will not be here for any of it.
Yeah, but I'll have to drive through the traffic coming back, won't I?
Yeah, I think it's over by like 3 o'clock.
Oh, okay. All right.
I think. I don't know.
It's always crowded, even without an event. It's always crowded on my drive in.
I'm sure it is.
So, yeah.
By the way, before the news, we were talking to our friend Robert, who...
Mm-hmm. The multimillionaire is going to give me a job?
$30 million just in Apple,
mm-hmm.
and he also bought a bunch of Amazon.
Mm.
630 says, Robert sure was bragging. Hopefully he will live to enjoy it and stays married. I don't know that he was bragging, but listen, if you or I had bought all that, I'd want a little chance to just say, hey, I just got to tell you one thing. You're never going to guess. Boom. Woohoo!
You know who he was bragging more about?
I'd be stopping people on the street.
Oh, hi, yeah.
How are you? What's your name? Did you know I bought Apple in 1984? I still have it. Woo! I just walk around screaming. You know, then you don't have to sell it if you just get to tell people.
Right.
Because that's fun. 847 writes, this guy is nuts. There's no guarantee of a long life. My father's boss penny-pinched all his life, and at 65, he retired. He died of a heart attack 6 months later.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I was kind of saying, hey, you know, you're already 60. I mean, you know, if I had $30 million, I wouldn't say, I'm going to wait 5 more years. I'd enjoy a little bit of it. Now, he's thinking, hey, it's still going to go up. It's still going to go up. Still going to go up. But at what point do you decide? Now, maybe he's like, hey, I have whatever I have. I enjoy my life. Mm-hmm. I don't need this. Then great. Awesome. But, you know, if you want the, you know, I literally would be buying a house on the beach in Mexico.
But wouldn't you try to diversify your... investments, I guess.
Well,
I mean, I'm not.
He clearly has other investments.
Well,
and
but it seems like it's all. Well, he's got property. He's got stock. He's got
who knows and who knows what else he has. Yeah. He might have other things. But with the Apple stock, if he sells, he's going to pay so much tax to buy into something that he doesn't know how it's going to do.
That's true.
He looks at this as still having a lot of room.
So. Yeah. See, I'm not a big financial wizard.
Doing, Roger, I don't know that you and I need to stick our noses in and tell him he's doing it wrong.
If he needs
I know you made $30 million, but here's what you should be doing.
He was bragging more about his neighbors.
Hey, Matt.
Well, because they got the real
guy. I know.
Like, yes, Jess.
When I hit the lottery or when Roger and I somehow get a kind donation, then we can do a show from Mexico.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. That'll be the day.
That would be fun. We should do a night owl trip to Mexico. We'll do the overnight show for Mexico.
So, you know, we've talked about this a long time ago. There's only two things left in my life that I haven't been able to check off my list.
Okay.
And I'm a very happy camper.
Yes, you are.
So I'm even with these two things not checked off, I'm still a very happy camper.
Okay.
Being independently wealthy. And owning my own radio station.
Those are two big ones.
Yeah.
They go hand in hand. You have to be independently wealthy if you're going to do that.
That's right.
Maybe Robert would adopt you. I asked. He laughed.
What? That's true.
You're never too old to be adopted by somebody that's really, really rich.
Not at all. Not at all. But he's got to take the whole family.
He could just take me.
I don't know. Wow.
I provided for them long enough, Roger. They're fine. They'll do just fine.
Okay.
Sometimes you got to just, you know, throw them in the river and let them try to swim.
Yeah. Boy, those locks will be changed before you get home.
That's all right. All right. Robert, you don't have to take the whole family. Just me is fine.
Oh, you're too easy.
Just fine. But Robert wouldn't want to adopt me because I'd get in the house and be like, dude, Dad, when are we selling that stock? What do you mean 5 more years? I can't wait 5 more years.
Bugging the heck out of them.
Oh, God, every day. You know, it's going to go back down. We're going to lose. We got to sell it. You got to sell it. I've been holding it since 84. That means it's time.
He'd kick you out so fast.
Yeah. Before the ink even dried on the adoption papers.
Yeah.
All right. 312-981-7200. It's 4:13 in the morning. John Williams earlier this week told a great story. I was talking with Griffin and with Steve Bertrand about just a family, a couple who passed away. I'm not sure if the husband passed first and then the wife, or if they both went at once, or why. But I'll let John tell the story that ends with some surprising twists. Go ahead, Jess.
Here is the story from the Washington Post. Now, listen to this. There's a guy named Jerry and a gal named Rita Alter. Jerry and Rita Alter. And they lived in a small New Mexico town called Cliff. They died. They have a son and daughter. Nobody can find them. Their nephew is made the executor of the estate, and he goes in to clean things out. And he does. He sells the sofa and sweeps things out. They're going to liquidate the assets and sell the home. And he pretty much does a sweep, but then he turns it over to an antiques or a dealer guy, and he comes in and buys everything that is left, including a painting on the wall. He pays them $2,000 for everything inside that remains. One of the things that was left inside was a de Kooning, a William de Kooning painting that had been missing from the University of Arizona Art Museum 30 years ago. The painting that was hanging on their bedroom wall is valued at $160 million.
Wow.
It's part of a series of paintings, and where do they get that number? One in that series sold in 2006 for just under $120 million, and they say this one's worth $160 million. It was hanging on the bedroom wall in a position where you could only see when you went in and closed the door, and the nephew didn't know about that, and the other guy comes in, and he says, ah, we'll take the painting too. That's a cool mid-century. He then takes it to his furniture and antique store and puts it up on the wall, and he's going to sell it. An hour later, somebody walks in and goes, that's a de Kooning.
Because he lives in an artsy town.
Right. So it's kind of an artsy area. There's a lot of artists in there, and they know about this sort of thing. And so somebody walks in, and they go, I think that's a de Kooning. The next person walks in and goes, that's a de Kooning. It's a real one. The next person walks in and says, that's a de Kooning. It's a real one.
I would have walked in and said, I'll give you $100.
All along the way, Violetta, that does not happen. Think about all the opportunities people had to try and cash in on this, but they didn't. So the guy who runs this shop then goes, holy cow. So what does he do? He puts it in the bathroom for safekeeping. And then he takes it home with him that night, and he stays up all night with it with his guns.
That's my favorite part of the story.
He's got his guns, and he's holding it there going, what if somebody's coming? I've got $160 million. He doesn't know it, but he knows he's got something. He's got a real de Kooning.
And he knows people are talking about it.
$2,000 he paid for this. It's hanging up in his store. And then it's there at the Manzanita Ridge Furniture and Antique Shop when somebody comes in and goes, you better be careful with that. So he rolls it up. He takes it home. He calls the University of Arizona and says, I think I have something that you guys are missing. And a day later, they show up. When the woman who is the curator of that exhibit at the museum walks in, she falls silent and drops to her knees and says, oh, my God.
Did you say that the frame had stayed empty for 16 years at the museum?
The whole time, as a reminder of what had happened, the museum left the frame on the wall. The thieves had cut it out of the frame. They rolled it up, and somehow or another, it ended up at Jack and Rita's house in Cliff, New Mexico.
So, I'm sorry, I may have missed this part, but they... Were they the thieves that took it out of the museum, do they think?
The FBI thinks... The FBI doesn't know.
Yeah.
But they can't find the kids.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. Where are the son and daughter?
Well, one is said was frequently institutionalized. The son, I think.
Well, I think I'll get to that point here, Steve. Yeah. But I think it was actually... Okay, the Atlers had two children, Joseph and Barbara. Reporters from multiple news outlets, including the Washington Post, had been unable to locate them. Several of the couple's acquaintances told the Times that Joseph Atler, the son, had severe psychological problems. He's been institutionalized, yeah. So his whereabouts aren't known, the daughter's whereabouts aren't known, and the nephew said, oh my God, we've got something here. Here's another funny thing about this couple that may or may not have stolen the painting, but probably did, because they were in Arizona when the painting went missing. And the description of the couple that probably stole it matched the description of the two.
They kept journals of what they ate and how they took their medicine every day, but the day the painting was stolen is left blank altogether.
People saw a car leave the museum that day that matched a car that they happened to own back then. There's a photograph of them in town the day that the painting went missing. But if you stole a $160 million painting, And you've often wondered this, maybe when people buy it, what do they do with it? Do they put it on the wall and just admire it? I mean, what is that? I don't understand that impulse.
So it was in their bedroom, but the other weird thing is they traveled the world.
They were to 140 different countries.
They both had pretty basic jobs.
One was a teacher, one was a speech pathologist at a local school district.
And yet they could afford to do all that traveling.
They had over $1 million in the bank when they died. But that, but how, where'd they get that money? Because they never sold the painting.
Well, you're assuming they only stole one painting or only did one thing.
There you go.
Where they, it was like a secret museum they were running in their house. You can come look at the... But 20, that doesn't seem very profitable now. Sure. The more I think about that, it doesn't...
There's a lot of holes in
that. Would you like to see my etchings? That doesn't work, Griffin.
It's not a great idea.
And okay, by the way, but, that's a de Kooning, but don't tell anybody.
And he was a children's author.
So he writes a book... And it wasn't a great book, but one of the stories in the book is about a couple, a mother and a daughter. That I think it's a parent and a child, and they go to a museum and they steal a gem. And the description of that theft matches the description of the painting.
Wow.
Except instead of a husband and wife, it's a child and a parent. And instead of a painting, it's an emerald.
When the painting was stolen, one of them, I think the wife was talking to the guard, chatting up the guard.
Distracts him.
In the kid's story, I think the daughter was chatting up the guard while the grandmother stole the gem.
So they did it for research. It was just...
No, they wrote it afterwards.
They wrote it afterwards.
So he was kind of like, it was a cry for arrest. Yeah.
Are you saying that the theft was the research for the
Yeah, you had to get inside the head of the character. You got to do it.
That's suffering for your craft now, isn't it? Okay, we may go to jail, but I really think we need to go.
I got
to
get it right. I got to get it right.
So the FBI to this day does not know. I mean, so it appears that these are this late couple stole it.
Wait, how does the story end? This is the worst kid story ever to steal something.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh yeah, get a load of this. Here's how the children's story ends. In the children's story, the guard realizes that the gem is missing. So he goes running out to chase the thieves, the parent and the child. And as they drive away, they turn the car around, run over, and kill the guard.
No.
And that way, nobody will ever know who did it. Now, while that did not happen in real life, in each case, nobody knows who did it. That's the story of Jerry and Rita Alter and the small town of Cliff, New Mexico, where the William de Kooning story, a painting, was found.
That's just a wild story.
Isn't that crazy? Isn't that fun? And again, I don't know, maybe this is a small point to you all, but imagine that. You have $160 million of contraband on the wall, which you could try and cash in. Or you have $160 million of contraband on the wall, which you stole. How do you live with yourself? And does it bring you so much joy to gaze at it in your bedroom with the door closed that that it's worth it to you? I don't understand that.
That's so true. I would suffer immense guilt anyway. And then if I put it in a place where I looked at it every night and was reminded, one, that I did it, but even more strongly, that I could get busted for doing it.
Right, you know, how do you go to sleep staring at it?
And you do. And so here's the age-old, and what do people always say in a story like this? They interview the neighbor, and they say they were a quiet couple. I never thought they would do something like this. And their friends and family say just that. And that is the story. We're talking about a piece that's in the Washington Post about Jerry and Rita Alter.
So, that's a story. That is a story right there. That's pretty cool. I mean, it's terrible, but it's pretty cool. I'm looking at the story that was on the Washington Post, and they talked a little bit about the idea that, you know, these guys traveled the world, but they never sold a painting. And Steve said, well, you're assuming that's the only one they stole. And that's a really good, interesting question, isn't it? Museum officials, so the family kind of, the sister of the wife, Rita, so he died, she died 5 years later. That's when the estate started being sold. And her sister says, there's no way she would have been involved in anything like that. I don't believe it. Museum officials, she said, maybe they bought a painting not knowing whose it was or where it was from. You know, maybe they bought this stolen painting. But you would have to think, if somebody stole a de Kooning worth $160 million, they're not just selling it to some couple, right? They're selling it to somebody rich. So that doesn't quite hold water, or that they wouldn't know what they have. Museum officials told the Arizona Republic that the painting only appears to have been reframed once during the 31 years it was missing, suggesting it had only had one owner during that time. Excuse me. Something else doesn't add up. Jerry and Rita Alter worked in public schools for most of their careers, yet they somehow managed to travel to 140 countries and all seven continents, documenting their trips with tens of thousands of photos. And yet when they died, they had more than $1 million in their bank account, according to the Sun News. I guess I figured they were very frugal, their nephew Ron Roseman told WFAA. Roseman couldn't be reached for comment on Thursday evening, but not long after Woman Ochre surfaced, he told ABC 13 that he couldn't imagine that his aunt and uncle had stolen the painting. They were just nice people, he said. That is going to be a movie at some point. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Right. I have dreamt about our dumb baseball team every day since we got eliminated. I never would dream about baseball stuff. I don't know if it was just because it's sort of an end of it's a closing chapter in my life,
right?
You know, because I'm not coaching anymore. I'm done with baseball, and so like a part of my life is now over. And I don't know if it's because of that or because I thought we should have gone further or what. But well, I've had dreams about it every single day.
Did you ever have like a dream the night before a big game?
No, none that I recall.
Really? Oh,
I mean, you
okay.
Only, you know, we only recall certain things, but but absolutely not. So I don't get it.
I could just be.
Maybe it was one of those life moments that, you know, resonated, I guess.
Well, I had dreams about teaching after I stopped teaching.
Yeah.
You know.
But every night for like a week straight?
Well,
when you were tired? I mean, that's the weird thing to me. It's like,
actually, I wasn't worried as much about the dreams as I was about the ever-present stress I was under in my waking hours, thinking I had to put lesson plans together and I had to get up at 4:30 in the morning and rush over to work and all that stuff. I still had a lot of stress even after I retired.
Well, that's the thing for me is like I hate that we're out of it. I hate that it's over, but it's a huge amount of stress relieved.
It's
a huge amount.
But now you need something else to fill that void.
I got plenty. I got plenty of other stresses, Raj. That's not the problem. 4:31 in the morning. Let's check the headlines now, Mr. Battish. Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, 312-981-7200 is the number. You can also text in on the line there. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com will join us in just a minute to talk about the Parker Solar Probe. If you remember, if you were listening around this time last week, Roger and I were trying to count it down and help it kick off and take off into space, but they had to scrub it. They launched it on Sunday morning instead. The Parker Solar Probe will go closer to the massive ball of gas and plasma known as our sun than any other spacecraft has gone before. It will brave extreme temperatures reaching up to 2,500 degrees Fahrenheit in order to collect data and images of the sun's atmosphere, called its corona. Spacecraft will also reach speeds of up to 430,000 miles per hour, making it the fastest ever human-made object. That's nowhere near fast enough to reach Alpha Centauri within our lifetime. That's our closest star besides our sun. It would have to travel around 7,000 years to reach that star. But it's fast enough to get from Philadelphia to D.C. in a second. NASA will use the data it beams back to figure out how we can better prepare for solar winds, which are streams of charged particles emitted by the corona. Particularly strong winds could change satellite orbits, interfere with instruments, even affect power grids here on Earth. If we want to head deeper into space in the future, we must first study how solar winds can affect our vehicles. This is from Engadget.com, by the way. Finally, studying the sun could shed light on the origin of life on Earth, since it's our source of light and heat. Before the Parker Solar Probe can soar as close as 3.83 million miles above the sun's surface, it has to spend 7 years encircling the sun again and again. It will use Venus's gravity to fly closer to the sun each orbit while picking up speed in the process. By the time it reaches its final orbit, it will be zooming around the sun at 430,000 miles an hour. Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com joins us on the phone right now. Hey, Chris, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you, Matt?
We're doing good. So last weekend at this time, we were, you know, doing live play-by-play, Roger and I, of the thing about to take off, and then they kept scrubbing it, bringing it back to 2 minutes, scrubbing it. So we kind of had a failure-to-launch situation on our show last week, but the next day they got it off and on its way. So now we just have to wait a really, really, really long time, apparently.
Not as long as you think, actually. So as you guys were doing the play-by-play last Saturday, I was standing right there at the Kennedy Space Center, also doing play-by-plays.
You were right there. That's cool.
Yes, I was. Yes, that's actually why I couldn't join you last week.
Were you working or just getting to witness it or writing for it or about it? What were you doing?
Yes, I was working. I was covering it for NASA Space Flight and for Daily Planet out of Canada.
Cool.
Yes. So as you guys were watching that, I was there also watching it. It was an absolutely spectacular launch when everything was working perfectly on Sunday. But let's dive in and talk about the mission since Parker's diving toward the sun, right?
Yeah, so it's supposed to take it 7 years to get there, but you're saying, it's not going to be that long before what?
Correct. So it'll take 7 years before it does its closest pass to the sun, that number that you just quoted, including the record-breaking speed of 430,000 miles per hour. But that is actually that's actually very, very far into its overall mission. So that is its 22nd of its 24 close dives that it'll actually do to the surface of the sun. So that one will happen in 2024, but its first close dive to the sun will actually happen later this year on November 5th. So all of its science data gathering and its main scientific mission will actually begin later this year, and then over the next 7 years we'll have up to 24, 26 close dives of the sun.
So later this year, it's already going to do a close dive. It just won't be nearly as close as it's going to get eventually?
Correct. So it'll get within 24... if you think about it, right, what we're basically doing with this mission is we have to progressively spiral it in. So we have to be very careful, because if we just flung it directly at the sun and didn't use Venus to slow down and didn't use Venus to alter our orbit, it would be going so fast when it got to the sun that when it slingshots around the back of the sun, it would be flung out into this orbit that's really long and would basically preclude the probe from doing multiple passes and multiple dives into the sun's corona, the outer layer of its atmosphere. So we had to design this mission very carefully to be able to do about three close dives, and I say three because some years have four, some years have less, but about three close encounter dives per year in the early parts of its mission, so that it can really help us unlock a lot of the mysteries and answer some of the questions that we want. So it'll start by it'll start later this year by doing its first dive, and then we'll have two more next year, and then three, and then three, and then four, and all the way out until it runs out of fuel in the mid-2020s.
Okay, so when it does its first close one this November, were you starting to say it's going to be about 24 million miles away from the sun?
So roughly that. As we continue to fly by Venus, and as each of those close dives occur, that distance will get shorter and shorter and shorter and shorter and smaller until eventually we reach that 4 million mile mark that you were quoting earlier, late in its mission.
Can you make that make sense for me, Chris? About how many miles away is the moon from us?
Gotcha. Let's start by talking about Earth and how that is. Earth is roughly 94 million miles away from the sun. Okay. So when we talk about 4 million miles, we're really talking about shrinking that, right, from 94 down to 4, which is incredible and takes a lot. So for comparison, the moon is about a quarter of a million miles away from the Earth.
Wow.
So we're talking, you know, really, really, really close to the surface of the sun, but still many times the distance between Earth and the moon.
But yet really far away still. Right. But also, I guess we have to take into account the sun is how many times bigger than the Earth? Like insanely.
Oh my goodness. it's insanely bigger. I know how big the sun is. I don't off the top of my head know how much bigger it is than the Earth.
But it's like crazy bigger than the Earth. So in some sense, you know, being four times the distance or eight times the distance from the sun as the moon is still really close when you consider the size of the actual sun, because it's still, even though, so if you think about how we would see the moon, you know, four times the distance from us or eight times the distance from us is just a really tiny speck. The sun, eight times that distance, would still be ginormous in the sky, right? It would still cover the entire sky because it would be so big, right?
Yeah, it would almost cover your entire field of view from that distance. And going that close, right, there's gravity considerations, which is part of what's going to help the probe achieve that really fantastically fast speed on one of its later dives into the corona. But there's also a really cool thing that they had to design the probe to do, which is to survive the pressure that is emitted by the light that comes off the sun. So it's not just gravity and it's not just the solar wind. It's literally the pressure of the light that we also had to consider in designing the probe and making sure that it could survive those really close, deep dives into the sun's outer corona.
So this pressure you're talking about, this is different than gravity. It's different than the heat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's a pressure, pressure sort of like compression on an airplane or when something drops to the bottom of the sea? A pressure like that?
Think of it more as wind in this case. So it's not the particles of the solar wind that we tend to think about, those particles that are constantly flowing outward from the sun, but it is a pressure that would try to fishtail you. So if you think about it, if you've ever been on the interstate and you're behind or you're driving a big rig and it's a really windy day, and you're seeing the trailer kind of wobble back and forth. Right. And everything. So that's what the pressure of the light waves and light particles are doing to this probe. So it has to counter for those to keep rock steady so that its sun shield, which protects it from the massive amount of heat that's being generated by the sun, and that heat shield is all that's protecting those very sensitive scientific instruments that are giving us all this data as it deep dives into the corona. The probe has to keep that sun shield pointed directly at the sun and counter for the pressure of the light waves and the light particles that are trying to fishtail it and point that sun shield away from the sun. So it's an incredibly complicated undertaking to get to be able to do that safely.
We're speaking with Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com about the Parker Solar Probe. We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, what are we going to find out? We know that we're going to try to find out more about the solar wind and everything that's emitted from the sun, but are we going to have pictures? Are we going to have audio? What are we exactly getting from this probe? We'll find out next, 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you for a few more minutes here on 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase, the Allstate Skyline studio, Skyline, I should think of, because we're talking space with Chris Gebhardt from NASASpaceflight.com. So, Chris, what are we going to get from the probe? As it you know, goes in and swoops down and gets close to the sun, will we see incredible pictures of the sun? Will there be audio of the sun? What will the data take the form of that we're going to get?
Yeah, so most of the data will take the form of things that you and I really, really wouldn't understand, right? Data measurements that are coming back that, you know, that the scientists are going to look at and go, oh, cool. And then they'll interpret that and tell us why it's so cool. There are some cameras on Parker Solar, but those are primarily engineering cameras. So we had mentioned that sun shield earlier, and one of the ways that it maintains its perfect alignment with the sun is a series of cameras that look at that sun shield. And as soon as the camera starts to detect the light and the disk of the sun, it can fire thrusters or move some gyroscopes around to keep itself aimed perfectly. So they're not like, ooh, ah, you know, like, you know, type of cameras for public consumption. They're more engineering, but that doesn't mean we won't get some pictures. from it. There is that possibility. There are also some cameras that are aimed directly at its field of travel. So for those of you who saw those great pictures from the total eclipse about a year ago, and we saw those big white bands coming off the sun, that's the area that Parker Solar is going to be flying into. So they've got some cameras mounted that are looking directly in front of it just so we can see what's there before we fly through it. So we may get some of those, but for the most part, this is going to be a mission where you're going to be hearing the scientists talk really excitedly about the data they're getting back instead of images for the public.
And so is it really just to mostly learn about solar winds? Is this kind of, in some ways, really just to protect satellites and protect our infrastructure? Is that most of what we're going to learn from this?
In a way. So those are certainly the real world and very practical and useful applications for it, because I know we certainly don't want our telecommunications network, at least I still want to be able to call someone unless, you know, if a solar flare hits. I still want my air conditioning to work since I live in Florida. Those are the practical sides, but there are some other things like understanding why the corona and this element of the sun accelerate some of its particles to near the speed of light, creating these very highly energetic and radiation dispensing particles that could be really harmful to our astronauts on future long duration missions. So we want to understand why those particles are being accelerated. We want to understand why the solar wind is accelerated in the corona, because that's where that happens. And all of that will lead to improvements in our spacecraft for future space travel and improvements in our satellites and telecommunication services here on Earth, and will also really help us better understand how the sun throws off those big events that can impact our technology. So it's sort of like a space weather forecasting thing is a good way to think about it. It's going to really help us understand why the sun does the things it does and when it does the things it does to help us know, like, okay, we're seeing these conditions on the sun, so a solar flare is possible, and given where we are, we know we might be affected by it. And if we know we're going to be affected by it, we can take steps to protect our technology and our life here on Earth, as well as our astronauts up in space.
All right, Chris, we only have a minute or so left till we got to go. So try to explain to me as best you can. I understand that a rocket launches and pushes something into space, and then it breaks mm-hmm. through the bonds of gravity, and then once an object is in motion, it will stay in motion, so we get up to a certain speed and there we go. How does it start going faster and faster by getting into an orbit around Venus?
Gotcha. So it's actually the exact reverse. So we're actually using Venus to slow down. So we needed to get Parker Solar into an orbit that would only, once it goes around the sun, would only come back out to Venus's orbital distance. And Venus is closer to the sun than Earth. So every time we go by Venus in the 7 flybys we do of that planet, we're actually slowing Parker Solar down, giving some of that energy to Venus. And by doing that, we're tightening the orbit that Parker Solar is in to allow it to get progressively closer and closer to the sun. Even though we're using Venus to slow down, the sun's gravitational force is so extreme that once we slow down to alter our orbit and get our orbit closer to the sun then pulls Parker Solar in and accelerates it as it comes in toward the sun. So it's a little bit of both. It's a very different mission because mostly our probes go out and they just keep accelerating and they use planets to increase their speed, and we're doing the exact opposite. So it's basically, if you think about it, it's like if you're on a truck and you're on the top of the mountain, you're kind of constantly applying your brake, but you're headed downhill, so you're gaining speed. That's a good way to think about it.
And when we go around, you said like it the sun grabs it and starts making it go faster. Is that mm-hmm. the only way I can sort of think of that is like when I was a kid and my sister would grab my hand and she would like would go around a corner and like sort of, you know, when you whip somebody, you're holding hands,
yes,
and then they whip it around. Is that basically what it does to the probe, that the rotation of that planet or star just kind of whips it?
Yep, that's exactly it. And that's what gives it that extra speed and really accelerates it as it does its closest approaches.
Chris, we're out of time today. We'll talk again soon. And what I want to learn from you next time, so 430,000 miles an hour is like our new record. What's the fastest we can make something go? Have we reached that yet? Mm. That until we invent other technology or something, that there's a limit right now, and it's still a long, you know, it said it would still take this thing 7,000 years to get to the nearest star going that fast. So we're certainly not, you know, anywhere near an actual travel to another world by humans. I wonder, you know, outside of wormholes and things like that, can we actually physically push something far enough, fast enough, that it can never get anywhere? We'll have to save that for next time. Chris Gebhardt, NASASpaceflight.com. Thanks so much for jumping on the phone.
Anytime, Matt. My pleasure.
All right. We'll talk again soon. We're going to take a quick break and then say it to Orion and Max for the morning show next, 720 WGN.